It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's the easiest place to go for all of your one-stop podcasting needs. We've got, thanks to Brother Deacon Asa, just about every imaginable podcasting platform there for your podcasting convenience. It also happens to be the best and easiest place to get the live stream during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday. 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time and 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And there you'll also find the chat room, the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that also accompanies the as an adjunct to the live program. If you wander on by with your screen name and your password right about now and jump in, you'll be met by the likes of Anatole and House of Roberts and Roger up in Oregon and Squeaky in California. And, of course, moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen on this, his fourth day of not using toilet paper, he's chosen to remain Sparky and not fold space. Fold TP, not space, because social distancing. Right? Right. Hi, I'm Bob, and you know what? I think I'm in a little bit better frame of mind. We saw something that vaguely resembled the sun today. Here in almost level West by Cole Trump, Virginia stand, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice, we'll begin our shutdown, not really a lockdown. I mean, let's not overblow it. We begin our shutdown at exactly 8 p.m. When this program goes off the air, well, West Virginia will be shut down. Yeah, I mean, kinda. I mean, you won't be able to go to a. Don't email me. It's just what it is. You won't be able to go to any nudie bars, strip clubs, bingo halls, gambling dens, barber shops, hair salons, the nails of and the finger and toenails of women in West Virginia are going to be in dire disrepair for as long as this lasts, and folks will just have to get by on their own nail files and emery boards and paint their own nails. And but you can go to church. Yeah. In fact, tomorrow's the West Virginia State Day of Prayer. And if you, and for those here in West Virginia who just really, really, really want to find out what the coronavirus COVID-19 feels like, well, tomorrow's a great opportunity at the West Virginia State day of prayer. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. Oh, and since he owns a shit ton of golf courses, well, not a shit ton, but a couple of big ones, you can also play golf in West Virginia. Now, I don't know how you socially distance two people in a golf cart, because there's no way make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice is going to walk 18 holes. Hell's bells, he probably can't walk from the cart to the putting green at this point. But yeah, you can. Now our cabins are closed, but our trails are open. In no way, shape, form, or fashion are we closing our trails or our golf courses. I guess theoretically the old swimming hole is still open because it's not a public swimming pool. It's just a, I don't know. I'm not gonna test that. So, thank you, Fab. Getting some notifications that the volume is a little bit low. I'll do my best, but the rest of you don't email me and say, "You're blowing out the speakers, Bob." Don't do that. I'm doing the damn dead level best that I can. But I am in a better frame of mind. Because we saw, like I said, something resembling the sun today. And as I had said I would, I made my way up to the Wiggling Pig, where they had gotten a truck in. I have not seen the parking lot of the Wiggling Pig so busy in ages. You know, that, bless their hearts, that little grocery store was hanging on for dear life, and we needed it to hang on for dear life, because it's the nearest grocery store for 15 miles. It's only about, an 8-mile round trip to the Wiggling Pig for me. And they had gotten in a truck. And the young man who manages the place was, he had gone so far as to put a "Please do not disturb, trying to cut some meat" sign on the door to the butcher shop. Meat cutting room, whatever. And I interrupted his, I spoke to his dad, and he interrupted his son long enough to bring me out a 2-pack of Boston Butts. Frozen solid. Harder, like granite they were hard. Hard butts. My goodness gracious, we are already off the rails and down into the gutter as the program's only 8 minutes old. But I got a couple of packs of Boston Butts, and they had some tenderized pork cutlets, little pieces of, like, sliced pork loin, boneless pork loin, that they'd run through the tenderizer. Agnes loves those the way I do them. So I pulled the cover off of the griddle for the first time this year. Fired it up, cleaned it off, oiled it, re-seasoned it, and then I took those. It is a cruel myth. Yes, that joke never gets old. It is a cruel myth that shake and bake only works in the oven. What I did is I cracked an egg, beat the egg, poured some milk in it, dredged my tenderized pork loins in a little bit of flour, ran them through the milk, dipped them in shake and bake for pork until I'd done them all. I had 8. And then all over on the griddle, I put 1 pat of butter and let it get nice and sizzly and brown. Laid the cutlet on it and did that again 7 more times. And by God, they were perfect. So I got to make lunch for Agnes and Ferg, and it made me feel a whole lot happier. And I discovered a little jar of gin-cured cornichons. You know, the wee tiny little gherkin pickles that had been gin marinated. And they had such a flavor. And so I served them, I served up the cutlets with a few of those little pickles. You know, for some reason or another, fried pork and kraut or fried pork and pickles go really, really well together. So like I said, the butts were frozen solid as Billable Rick asked. Bob, were they butts of steel like in the Denise Austin exercise video? They were more like butts of stone. But thanks for the Denise Austin reference. You'll get a cowbell for that. Lee in New York says, lockdown. Hi, Bob. You can still cook, right? Then you can still experience joy. And that is exactly right, Lee. And it just made me happy. And it made them happy, too. Agnes said they were absolutely fantastic. So the pork tenderloins were the first things I cooked on the griddle. And tomorrow, because the butts are vacuum-packed in plastic, I just set them in a food-grade plastic bucket with water all around them. They should be thawed by tomorrow. Throw out the old water and make a couple of gallons of brine. Put my secret blend of herbs and spices in them. My secret blend of herbs and spices has never had included in it crushed chili peens. Oh, this should be some magnificent pulled pork. So I'll spend all day tomorrow brining them, and then come Thursday, I'll get the a little the worse for wear smoker ready to go, and build a fire in it. I've got some wood. I got some lump charcoal, and I'm gonna smoke those butts. Low and slow. And I'm going to keep one for us, and I'm going to give one away, because there's got to be people out there that need some eats. So I'll probably, being very careful to be socially distant and observing all hand washing and gloving and precautions like that, I thought I'd just be a sort of a barbecue Santa Claus and take some barbecues around for folks. Just because it seems the neighborly thing to do in a time when we can't do other neighborly things. Yes, Frank, as a matter of fact. Oh, my God, the cowbells are running fast and furious. Our buddy Fab says, would frozen butts... Wait for it. Here it comes. Oh, what did I do with it now? Damn it. Would frozen butts be a real hard ass? Yes. Yes, Fab, yes. See, we got the right attitude for this. We really, really do. Pork cutlets, you say, says Ron and Raleigh. You know, you could serve those cutlets with an apple compote. Yes, you could, or just applesauce. But I was in kind of a hurry because the urge to engage in outdoor cooking was strong with me, and apple compote involves indoor work, and indoor was where I did not wish to be. There's one. I've got to add one more thing. I got to add one more thing to the whole outdoor cooking collection, and that's just a propane burner that I can use for skillets and so forth. I think I may have one somewhere. Might have to replace the regulator, but that would get us to just about a state of something approaching perfection. Lee in New York with a non-obligatory MASH reference. The federal government had ventilators. New York needs them, but the federal government has a stockpile, and Vice President Pence praises how the administration is working seamlessly with governors. Sorry, I see the seam, and it's where health and pandemic is falling apart. The need for available medical components reminded me of the episode of MASH, The Incubator. Now, if I give you ventilators, then I won't have them. And those are my ventilators. Yeah, but what if we wanted a pizza oven? You could have a pizza oven. Just where it says machine gun, cross out machine gun, and write in pizza oven. Smoked butts. Steve in New York wants to know, are they good enough to chew and then savor them in your cheeks? Well, after I give them away, what you do them with them is entirely your business. So I'll leave that for the delectation of others. Apple compote does sound kind of good, though. They had apple cobbler up at the Wiggling Pig yesterday, and under our shutdown, the grocery store rule will remain open. You're just not supposed to, like, go and hang out or anything. But that was I got some, they didn't have any Haagen-Dazs, so I got some ice cream with a nice loading dose of guar gum and locust bean gum and carrageenan and stuff in it. And it was still pretty darn good on that piping hot apple cobbler. Yes, I do love me a cobbler. Kind of partial to peach, really, when you get right down to it. Too early for peach. If there's anything that I can think of, and there's a lot of them really, that I'm going to miss. I'm going to miss Secret Sandwich Society. They'll be back, but I think we're probably looking, if we're really smart about this, we're looking at a 3-month shutdown. And that's going to eat up a whole bunch of the spring and early summer. So March to April, April to May, May to June, yeah. Somewhere, oddly enough, long about West Virginia Day, which will be the 157th anniversary of the statehood of West Virginia, will be at 3 months shutdown. But the good news is, and our buddy Mike in Cascadia mentioned this to me. Oh, wait a minute. I'm getting way the hell out in front of things. I'm sorry. I'm bad, just bad. Every program here begins with gratitude, or at least it's supposed to begin with gratitude. Sometimes I get ahead of myself. But it's time to send out thanks. And that would be thanks to our 24th of the month subscribers. That would be Josh and out in the great Northwest, Pamela and Samson. Thank you all most kindly indeed. And where do we stand in just trying to keep this little operation on the air? $100. Thanks to Charlene's challenge yesterday, we've only got $100 to stay even with the week, which is huge. So 10 at 10, 5 at 20, et cetera. We can be finished with Tuesday at $100. So thank you again for making that possible, Charlene. And Ralphs and Sailor Chick and Angelo and Barbara yesterday. Thank you. And if we can, and thanks to our subscribers today. Again, that would be Josh and Pamela and Samson. Thank you all. With any luck at all, we'll knock out that other 100, and we'll be okay for the time being, and at least pay this month's bills, get them knocked out. As we move toward the end of March. Yeah. In all seriousness, a couple of things. Mike in Cascadia sent me the link, and I'd seen it from Kenda in Missouri and Lady B as well. And what it is... It's called COVIDActNow.org. And as far as I can tell, it's legit, and the information is solid. for how we get through this as best we can. It will be a struggle. Now, understand, the struggle part, when I say it'll be a struggle, I say that being fully aware of the fact that I'm one of those people, and many of you are as well, who are the living beneficiaries of what I call transgenerational wisdom. I know Sparky is. I am too. And what I mean by transgenerational wisdom is that as a child and up into my adulthood, especially in my adulthood when I knew enough to ask a few more questions for a better sense of understanding, I had at my disposal a pair of parents whom I talk about a lot because they meant the world to me. They were my world, brought me into this world. And they had lived through both the Great Depression and the Second World War. And to call them the greatest generation is a bit too facile. They simply considered themselves to have done the best they could during hard times. From my father, I learned in what were probably painful bouts of PTSD, because they weren't necessarily pleasant experiences when he was recounting them, what it was like to stand fire watch in the bowels of an aircraft carrier for 24 hours on end with a pair of ancient, really heavy headphones on his head that he said after a while would make him just screaming crazy because they felt like his head was in a vice. And all he knew was the world around him, the rooms, the blazing hot rooms around him in the power generation center of that aircraft carrier. He knew very little of what was going on above decks or in the skies above him, which in its own way is probably as or more terrifying than being shot at. I had an uncle who was in the skies above where my father was, a pair of uncles who walked the ground of Europe and did not come home. Agnes had an uncle, I had the pleasure of meeting him, who walked across Europe and did come home, but came home forever marked by his experience. From my mother, I learned about things like ration books and blackout curtains, and how hard it was to get something as prosaic as a tire, and how cherished a piece of beef for Sunday dinner could be. And how you patched your clothing and the better seamstress you were, the more likely your clothing was to survive, because there wasn't going to be more. And how the girls in the high school all learned to sew and make their own outfits as a senior project in home ec in 1943. All this would be probably unimaginable if I was to try to explain it to my little grandchildren. They'd think Opa was just telling one of his funny stories. But the reason that I mention all of those things is that for the most part, that generation survived them, save for the ones who did not come home from the global war against global fascism. And so now, in this country, we have people who are actually pissing and moaning about this shutdown. Chief among them, the biggest coward in the United States, Donald John Trump. The coward Caligula. Who said today that he wants the economy up and raring to go by Easter. Which will surely mean the deaths of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or more, Americans. Yeah, I'm sure we will get into that at some point. But the bottom line is this. That generation that I was just describing went through things that you and I can scarcely imagine. Even those of us who heard it firsthand, what? For many of us, the closest thing we ever got to it was the Arab oil embargoes. When we nationally and collectively about had a shit hemorrhage because we started having to pay about half of what the rest of the world was paying for a liter or 4 liters, a gallon, of gasoline. So in the name of perspective, let's keep that in mind. That generation, for me it was my parents, for others it's their grandparents, for some it's their great-grandparents, maybe even great-great. But for me it was my parents. My parents' generation endured privation on a level that we cannot begin to comprehend. Lived in constant fear of death. Imagine being a teenage girl in West Virginia in a shitty little holler like where I live and making sure that the blackout curtains were drawn because you never knew when German or Japanese bombers were going to find the holler and bomb the living snot out of you because of the economically vital coal mines in the area. Waking up every morning and wondering if the people you loved who were half a world away were still alive. Try. Sincerely try to imagine that. And then sit back and realize that all we have to do is find something we haven't watched yet on Amazon Prime or Netflix or Hulu. And stay the hell home and watch it. Well, I tell you, we sure do got it tough, don't we? I think about that every time I see one of these bullshit complaints, and they are legion now. About how hard it is, and oh dear, oh me, the poor, poor economy. It'll be ruined. We'll never get it back, you stupid fox, you right-wing pieces of shit, you Trump-voting turds. You don't know what privation is. A pledge pin? Sorry, couldn't resist. Yeah, Sparky says, you're blowing my mind with all the stories of parents and grandparents. My parents were married 2 weeks before Pearl Harbor. Precisely, that's what I said. For some people, it's their grandparents, their great-grandparents. For Sparky and me, it's our parents. My parents weren't married until 1960. 61? Nope. Might ought to check. But that's because they found each other again after having known each other in childhood. They found each other again later in life, which in many ways are the sweetest loves. I got a feeling that generation would either slap us until the snot flew. Well, no, they'd be smart about it, and they'd practice social distancing and sit about 8 feet away and say, wait till this is over, then I'm going to slap you till the snot flies. Piss ants. I don't think that would be, I'm not talking about us. I'm talking about the fucking crybabies. On the other hand, I mean, I joked about people, about the women of West Virginia having unkempt nails. I worry like hell for the people who do those nails. I worry for the folks who work at the gambling dens. I worry for the people who work in restaurants. The guy whose sole source of income is the barber shop with one chair that he runs. I know that barber. There's a lot of one-chair beauty parlors in this state, too, and around the nation. You know who I don't worry about? Goldman motherfucking Sachs. Delta Airlines. Carnival Cruise Lines. I don't worry about them at all. There's not a CEO in the United States that I am remotely concerned won't make it through this. There's not a gajillionaire, a Bill Gates, a Warren Buffett, a Jeff Bezos that I worry about. I don't even worry about little pissant nouveau riche like the filthy Trump tribe. They'll be fine. It's we, us, the people who carry this country on our backs, that I worry about. But we will be okay. And for this little community, we will keep each other okay. For as long as I can keep this program on the air, we will keep each other okay. We will talk to one another. We'll tell stories to one another. You know, I'd kind of like to hear, because I've talked about this for a really long time, I'd kind of like to hear from people in the community with some background in performance or theater and see if what, you know what, because for years and years ago, I talked about the Horn Repertory Theater of the Air. And I got to thinking today that maybe some of the great Greek tragedies would be a good start. Maybe the Oedipus trilogy or Oedipus at Colonus, Antigone. Maybe those would be handy. And when we could get together and do it right here and see what lessons the ancients had for us in a day when every piece of entertainment had to be performed live, just like this show is always live. Antigone could probably bring some really, really cool voices into play. Because there are some strong female characters in Antigone. Antigone and her sister in particular. So, you know, just a little musing. Not amusing, musing.
which of course is also a Greek-rooted word, named for the Muses. We can get through this. I mean, sure, we may not have our favorite brand of toilet paper. But as soon as America settles down and stops hoarding everything the minute it hits the shelves, as soon as we settle into the groove of these of these hopefully 3 months or more. I mean, I'll take 3 months of shutdown over the end of the universe any day. Because that's what death is. Death is the end of the universe. The universe itself doesn't end collectively, but it ends for one person every time one person passes away. And in this plague, we need to be cognizant, as the poets have advised us, John Donne in particular, that we are diminished by every individual we lose. So 3 months, let's see maybe what we can do with them. What can we make of them that we wouldn't otherwise make? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I wanted to begin the program, and well, we're close enough to the beginning. I wanted to begin the program with a note from Paul from Parts Unknown. Paul sent an update early in the wee hours of this morning. Paul from Parts Unknown wrote to say, I'm emailing you at this late hour because it was about 20 after 4 in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Because I just sat down after getting home from work. My work just implemented the next round of isolation protocols to keep us from getting sick. My lab has sent home all office personnel, and they're currently working from home. The essential workers have been split into two teams and work different shifts. The morning shift starts at around 5 a.m. and finishes at 1:30 p.m. Then the cleaning crew comes in and cleans all common use areas and commonly touched things like doorknobs, keyboards, tables, and so forth. Then the swing crew comes in at 2:30 p.m. and works till around 11:30 p.m. Then the cleaning crew comes in again and does a deeper cleaning overnight. I'm on the evening crew, which makes it near impossible for me to call into the program. I'll try to email when I can and give updates. We're not even halfway through this yet. So the most important thing to focus on for me has been my mental health. It is hard for me to escape from what is happening. I'm always thinking about what is going on, and it's hard to focus on other things. Something that helped me this weekend was working on the lawn. I got the rototiller out and tilled the garden, pulled up a lot of weeds, and mowed the lawn. While I was doing it, I didn't think about everything going on outside. It was good to do something normal, something that I don't have to do differently due to outbreak. Try doing something that is normal or routine for you. We're all going to need to find ways that help us relax and take our minds off things for a few minutes. I send my love to the Horn family. I will write in when I can. Paul, from Parts Unknown. Thank you, Paul. Thank you. Finding those little moments of what used to be the mundane can now become the exceptionally precious. And in fact, it was Paul's note that reminded me that I needed to get up to the Wiggling Pig. And I had Paul's note thinking about the rototiller and the lawnmower in the back of my mind when I was looking at the rapidly depleting meat case. And I saw that couple of packages of tenderized pork cutlets. And I thought, yeah, that is exactly what I need. And so, thank you, Paul, for that reminder. And as I told Paul, you know, you have to pay attention to self-care. Because otherwise it's easy to get lost in all of the stuff going on around you. I've sat in on more than a few seminars on self-care based on what I've been doing with the last, 16, 17 years of my life. I'm not talking about this. I'm talking about the ongoing struggle to save the lives of people in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. Because, as we were told back then, the people doing the poisoning and the killing, they get days off. They also get a paycheck. They get to walk in the door at the end of the day and set down the briefcase and pretend that they aren't engaging in monstrosities against other human beings and sit down to dinner, do whatever it is they do, go to the movies, what have you. But the people who are engaged in an existential struggle have a much harder time doing that. It's hard to put it aside and just act like it isn't there for a little bit. So mowing the grass and tilling up the garden and pulling weeds actually becomes an exercise in existential self-care. Just like, as silly as it may seem, firing up the propane griddle for the first time in the spring. Sparky, meanwhile, got all his weed eating done over the last 3 days. He said, "I'm glad I did. We just had a cloud burst." I think that may explain the lack of space folding. Well, no, you've got it backwards, Sparky. It's not that you did it and then you had a cloud burst. You got your weed eating done, and that caused the cloud burst. It's all cause and effect. Steve in New York, in regard to Paul from Parts Unknown's note, says, "The advice from Paul from Parts Unknown is exactly why this program is so important." Thank you, Steve. And it's worth noting that while Paul's dealing with a lab situation, and I think this is one of those things that makes all of this so difficult, is that, you know, while the kamikaze could come blazing out of the sky, or the bullet could find one somewhere in the field during the Second World War, or a torpedo, or a bomb, or a grenade, it is the fact that there is something stalking us that we can't see. And it's not even stalking us within the traditional sense of the word. It has no mind. It has no will. It has no desire. As Paul from Parts Unknown reminded us, science is still of split opinion as to whether a virus is even alive. I think Lottie mentioned that as well. They're just particles. And they wreak havoc. And they've been wreaking havoc since we decided we were tired of our hunting and gathering ways and decided to sit down and live with a bunch of animals all around us and stay where we were and plant crops. And, well, we grew ourselves some diseases along the way, too. Because you know who the ultimate social distancers were? Hunter-gatherers. Yep. There's a reason that hunting and gathering is the single most long-term successful survival strategy that humanity has ever known. 70,000 years? 60? Something like that? And we've been at this somewhere between 7 and 11,000 years, and in that time we've depleted all the resources of the planet, and we are hanging, and have been for some time now, hanging on the tenterhooks of doom. Existential doom. Yeah, see, David in South Carolina, Stan gets it. No tests / radar. There are no tests or radar to predict incoming either. No. You just know it's here and you know it's flying around and you never know when you're going to get stung. Really, Sparky? I didn't think we were supposed to have one today. Sparky says the daily shit show is underway at the White House. I thought we were going to get a break from the madness. Well, we probably can't have one of those because, you see, I need some clearance from y'all, please. I'm so tired of tiptoeing around a phrase. I'm so tired of using phrases that don't necessarily mean what I mean, and I'm so tired of not being able to use a phrase that was essentially medically benign. You know, we use verbal gobbledygook to try to describe Donald Trump, and we say things like he suffers from an intellectual disability. Well, it's fairly obvious to see that this guy ain't right, and so they've got to let him. They've got to let him have a pretend Trump rally every afternoon with the entire country as the captive audience. Ah, Dr. Fauci is back. Well, that explains why they're doing it. He might be worth listening to. And I'll go over there in a minute, but I wanted to get back to something that I mentioned early in the program. And thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly to Lady B. Lady B is either on the way to work or at work and has jumped in to get us started. Thank you, Lady B. Thank you very, very kindly. Very much indeed. So maybe we'll knock out that $100 and give the Horn a fighting chance to keep this conversation going. But on that COVIDActNow.org webpage, it now says that West Virginia, our point of no return for intervention to prevent hospital overload, is greater than 3 months. And that is because, you know, with the exception of churches and Jim Justice's golf courses, we've shut the state down. So our here in West Virginia, which is one of the most fragile and vulnerable populations in the United States, after 3 months of shelter in place, we have a fighting chance of less than 1,000 deaths. And even if it's 1,000, it's 1,000 too many. but that beats the hell out of the 36,000 estimated deaths that would have been predicted from no action, or the 25,000 that would have come from 3 months of social distancing. No action at all. Our hospitals would have been overloaded on Monday, April 20th. With 3 months of social distancing, Thursday, May 14th, 2020. The cumulative infected rate would have been around greater than 70% in both instances, but with 3 months of shelter in place, it's less than 1%. And the best thing I can see is estimated date hospitals overloaded, outside time bound. Shelter in places are now in place for Washington, Oregon, California, New Mexico, Louisiana, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, West Virginia, Delaware, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. Almost nothing is being done in Idaho, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee. And what? Oh, okay, just checking. Social distancing is going on in Nevada, in Arizona, in Utah, in Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, Arkansas, Texas, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, Kentucky, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, and Rhode Island. In other words, the places that are going to make this harder are Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Missouri, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Idaho. Oh, by the way, Hawaii is on shutdown as well. We can do this, but we somehow have to figure out a way to get all the several states on the singing on the same page. Jim Justice is a monumental screw-up, but I have to give him credit for taking the advice of the experts and not pissing and moaning about when we're going to lift this. Steve from Georgistan says, it's obvious to me why this orange monster is willing to put us all at risk to get a bump in the stock market. The stock market's all he has to hang his hat on. Without a significant market bump, he fears that he will not get reelected and even go to white-collar prison. There may be sealed indictments with his name on it, waiting on his White House departure, and who knows this? He would rather risk killing our loved ones than go to the white-collar prison. Coward! Imagine the fear he lives in each and every day. A few other notes. Rusty says, as my father would say, Saturday 3:15 p.m., I'm going to beat your ass. Yeah, that's when the 3 months are over. I'm going to slap the spit out of you. Right. Ron in Raleigh asks, which carrier? I watched Midway the other night. It was a fair representation of the battle. Although it was a movie, it showed the Pearl Harbor attack in such a way as to convey the horror of the event. The carriers were the last line of defense between Japan and the West Coast. I'll send a link if you wish. Well, I need to find it and watch it. I'd like to. Yeah, the three carriers weren't at Pearl Harbor. The rest of the fleet was. But having those three carriers and their escorts, their task forces out to sea, was the one calculation that the Japanese Imperial Navy missed. And it made all the difference in the world. Which carrier? My dad served aboard the Essex, Ron. My uncle flew off of, at least one Jeep carrier, and I can't remember the name of that. He also flew off the Franklin, which got sunk, I think. And he flew off the Enterprise. What's that? Steve in New York says, don't forget Georgia. My brother told me that Kemp has kept parks and so forth open. It's been limited to localities to take precautions. He said that Kemp says it's a hoax. Yeah, that's the problem. In the map, they're not Georgia's not red like Alabama. They're a sort of gold color. And that means that they're practicing, some social distancing, but not enough. Georgia falls in the category of voluntary shelter in place for high-risk groups, schools, and bars, or restaurants closed. But by God, there in Alabama, Mississippi, and Tennessee, they're going to have them some COVID freedom. Scott in San Diego says, uh-oh, we're in real trouble. I've heard the COVID-19 pandemic to be compared to a case of Mother Nature sending us to our room for a while to think about what we've done, presumably to the earth or how we treat each other generally, power-wise. I guess there's a kernel of truth in that notion, but when has that ever worked with any kid at any point in human history or in parenting? We never learn about the best we can expect from a timeout. It kids, us, or those in charge of things, is kids thinking up new and craftier ways to misbehave or get around the laws of nature and the nation. Well, I offer you the article that I mentioned last week, the New York Times article, about Ron Paul and how he said that a butcher who would sell meat to whoever had the money in their pocket during rationing in World War II was a hero who found a way, who found a free market solution to governmental mischief. That, of course, is the father of the dickhead senator from Kentucky who probably infected most of his own caucus. Oh, and by the way, it was about a week or so ago that the dickhead who infected his own caucus, most likely, his daddy sent out to his newsletter an article declaring that COVID-19 is a government hoax to take away all our freedom. The goddess of irony is a good goddess, and that ought to be worth about a case of rubber chickens to be sacrificed. And I don't know, I think I'll probably tuck some whoopee cushions away just as a sort of hallelujah in her praise for the unsuspecting sitter. Oh, well, I'm kind of disinclined to do this, but let's check in. We've made it through the first hour of the filibobster, so we can see what's going on with the madness. I'll be curious to see, because it infuriated diseased Donnie that networks cut away from him last night instead of letting him just blather on ad infinitum. CNN and MSNBC cut away. Please, no, Bob, don't. That's Ralph's. I know. Are they showing it? Let's see. Yeah, they are at the moment. MSNBC has it. He's reading, or trying to, again.
Never will be denied. Now what I'd like to do is perhaps ask a person who has really established herself as maybe the world's great expert on what she does. If I could ask Deborah to come forward and say a few words. And
you know, again, Deborah, not Dr. Birx. Listen, she didn't go through 6 years of epidemic medical school for you to call her Deborah, dick.
So, Deborah, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. I think those of you who heard the town hall, we are continuing to accelerate testing at a record rate. We now have 370,000 tests that have been done. Majority of those, over 220,000 in the last 8 days, which of those of you have been...
Still woefully behind for anybody keeping score at home.
Equivalent to what they did in 8 weeks that we did in 8 days. This was made possible because of the HHS team working together, bringing together the strength of the FDA with the CDC and under the leadership of Secretary Azar. We're very proud of those numbers, but we know that we have to do more, and we continue to accelerate in testing to ensure that those who need the test are tested first and have access. As we talked about yesterday, we're working on the ability for people to take their own sample. That does not mean home testing. That means taking your own sample in the front of your nose with available swabs into normal saline that can be transported to the laboratories. That will allow and free up all of the drive-throughs to be very sparing on PPE, because you'll be able to do that with gloves rather than the full PPE outfits. This will allow for more of that PPE to be dedicated to our hospitals. I think those of you who are tracking this epidemic closely, like I am, you will begin to see that there is encouraging results coming out of Italy. We are impressed by the decreases that are seen in mortality, the number of people succumbing to this illness, and the number of new cases. Our new cases will continue to surge because we're still working on our backlog, although we will be in touch with the laboratories after this press conference to really...
Because the disease has been running around this country for much longer than any of these people will dare to admit, except under the most... rare of circumstances.
We will let you know when we've reached that equilibrium. Finally, and I know Dr. Fauci will talk about this further, we remain deeply concerned about New York City and the New York metro area. About 56% of all the cases in the United States are coming out of that metro area, and 60% of all the new cases are coming out of the metro New York area, and 31% of the people succumbing to this disease. It means, because they still are at the 31% mortality compared to the other regions of the country, that we can have a huge impact if we unite together. This means, as in all places, they have to be following the presidential guidelines that were put out 8 or 9 days ago, and this will be critical. But to everyone who has left New York over the last few days, because of the rate of the number of cases, you may have been exposed before you left New York. And I think, like Governor DeSantis has put out today, everybody who was in New York should be self-quarantining for the next 14 days to ensure that the virus doesn't spread to others, no matter where they have gone, whether it's Florida, North Carolina, or out to far, far reaches of Long Island. We are starting to see new cases across Long Island that suggest people have left the city. So this will be very critical that those individuals do self-quarantine in their homes over these next 14 days to make sure they don't pass the virus to others based on the time that they left New York. So if they've already are 4 days out, then it's just 10 more days. So I thank you if you help get that message out to others. Dr. Fauci.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Deb. I want to just talk very briefly about two or three things. First, the issue of testing and how that has really changed the complexion of the approach that we're going to be able to take. Testing was an issue. We had many questions of testing in this room for a number of times. Now that we literally have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of testing out there, there are a few things that we can do with that. One of the things is that when we make policy about what we're going to be doing with the rest of the country, particularly those areas that are not hot spots, we need to know what the penetrance of infection is there. So we need to put a light on those dark spots that we don't know. We have to act policy-wise on data.
and we're going to be getting more data, a lot more data. The other thing is that the areas of the country that are not hotspots, that are not going through the terrible ordeal that New York and California and Washington State are going through, they still have a window of a significant degree of being able to contain. In other words, when you test, you find somebody, you isolate them, you get them out of circulation, and you do the contact tracing. When you have a big outbreak, it's tough to do anything but mitigation. We have an opportunity now that we have the availability of testing to do that. So you're going to be hearing more about how we can inform where we're going, particularly because we have the ability to test. The second thing is I just want to reiterate what Dr. Berg said about New York. It's a very serious situation. They've suffered terribly through no fault of their own. But what we're seeing now is that, understandably, people want to get out of New York. They're going to Florida. They're going to Long Island. They're going to different places. The idea, if you look at the statistics, it's disturbing. About 1 per 1,000 of these individuals are infected. That's about 8 to 10 times more than in other areas, which means when they go to another place, for their own safety, they've got to be careful, monitor themselves. If they get sick, bring it to the attention of a physician, get tested. Also, the idea about self-isolating for 2 weeks will be very important, because we don't want that to be another seeding point to the rest of the country wherever they go. And then thirdly, just one just comment about drugs and the testing of drugs. You know, you heard yesterday about drugs being out there that physicians on an off-label way can prescribe it to give people hope of something that hasn't been definitively proven to work, but that might have some hope. I don't want anybody to forget that simultaneously with our doing that, we're also doing randomized clinical trials on a number of candidates. You've heard about candidates, but there are others in the pipeline where we'll be able to design the study, and over a period of time, particularly since we have so many infections, we'll be able to determine definitively, are these safe and are they effective? We're talking about remdesivir, other drugs, immune sera, convalescent sera, monoclonal antibodies. All of these are in the pipeline now, queuing up to be able to go into clinical trial. So I'll stop there and talk.
Thank you, John. Good job. Larry, how about just a quick few minutes on...
Larry Kudlow.
The hill,
thank you, sir.
Foster Brooks. Well, we can take a minute away from Larry Kudlow because that motherfucker doesn't have anything to say. Dr. Fauci mentioned remdesivir. We just gave a 7-year right to profit off of remdesivir to Gilead Pharmaceuticals. That means that even if remdesivir proves to be effective, and we have no way of knowing, that Gilead will be able to charge the maximum amount of money to make the maximum amount of profits off of the agony, misery, suffering, and death of the American people. That capitalism is just something. And by the way, Yamiche Alcindor, thank you, David, in South Carolina, Stan, for sending this along, quoted Corona Claudius there earlier saying, President Trump just said, as we near the end of our historic battle, there's light at the end of the tunnel. This stupid walking plague thinks we're at the end of it. Yamiche Alcindor added, fact check, government's own plan warned pandemic will last 18 months or longer. Trump himself said this could last until August. Oh, and now that everybody's fleeing New York, I have a question. Not everybody. You get the idea. But I have a question. Where's Princess Iwanka Madaddy Trump Kushner? Is she still playing pup tent with her little gits there in Manhattan? Is she, more importantly, drawing a paycheck? Is she still sucking at the federal teat? She who has no expertise, no ability, and no business in government. These are questions worth asking.
Robert says, time delay. I know I live in the future and everything, but I'm watching a feed of this conference. It's a good 5 minutes ahead of what I'm hearing on the horn. I assume CNN's doing it. No, it's coming from a pool feed, but it's all coming to me through my internet television provider, which is apparently way the hell behind regular cable service, and even you in Australia, Robert. Because I had a note from Sparky saying, Jesus, Kudlow, long before Larry Kudlow spoke up and started slurring into the microphone. And Brother Dakin Asa reminding us, you think Gilead's bad? Wait until the next pharma bro gets a hold of Remdesivir and ups the price eightfold. Oh, I know. Billable Rick says, did I just hear Dr. Deborah say that the mortality rate for COVID-19 victims in New York City is 33%? Really? My God, we're all screwed, Bob. I hope she didn't, but the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department can check me on that. Odd, says Steve in New York. The CDC says we've tested less than 100,000 people. I know. Home testing. Bob, if Trump was given the swab to self-test, I doubt if he'd use the correct orifice. Apologies about ruining dinner.
I don't know how I'm supposed to get it up here. Lindsay, what are you doing back there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there went dinner for the Central Daylight Time Zone. Lee sends his apologies. Oh, he's back.
I think we can get up there quickly, and I think it allows us to supersede. It allows us to help these great companies that need help, like Boeing, which is, had a
Don't
problem.
You love that?
And then on
Boeing
top of that
help.
Problem, it had the virus come in. But we'll be helping Boeing. We'll be helping the airlines. We'll be helping the cruise lines. We'll be doing a lot of things, and the money will all come back to us, and it'll come back to us in a very strong form. And
in a very strong form.
I'd like to ask our great vice president to say a few words, if you would, Mike, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. The White House Coronavirus Task Force met again today. And on behalf of the President of the United States, everyone on our team.
I'm beginning to think this country would be better off if the White House Coronavirus Task Force would stop meeting.
And small are responding to the threat of the coronavirus in ways that are deeply inspiring. People are acting on the president's 15 days to slow the spread, and it is making a material difference. Our experts standing beside us told us that if every American, regardless of whether you're in an area that's impacted by an outbreak of the coronavirus or not, if every American would embrace these guidelines, that we could significantly reduce the number of Americans.
Then, Mike, tell the dickhead Republican governors of Florida and Georgia and South Carolina and North Carolina and so forth, well, not North Carolina, to shut it the fuck down.
The focus of our task force, of course, is to slow.
Tell Kay Ivey in Alabama, who values life, tell her to shut it down. Oh, my God. Trent Reeves. I mean, when you hear a name like Trent Reeves, governor of Mississippi, you know that that dickhead who won't shut his state down is probably the great-grandson of another dickhead who didn't have the common sense to understand you couldn't go to war with somebody that had a hell of a lot more people and guns than you did. Jesus, these people.
It's 8 weeks, and it's because of the public-private partnership that the president forged with commercial labs. And I would encourage people around the country to remind your family members and friends, if you don't have symptoms, don't get a test. We want to make sure people who are having symptoms, who have a concern, have the ability to be tested and to have those tests processed.
How about treatment?
We're continuing to urge all county hospitals, all labs around the country to report to the CDC all the results of the test, as it'll give these experts around us the ability to continue to advise the president on best practices. As I mentioned, we all continue to follow the outbreak around the country and the test results. But as several have mentioned, we're particularly focused on New York. The reality is the New York metro area was 60% of the new cases in the country. And specifically, as a layperson, I can tell you that the infection rates...
Wait, do you hear him sniffing? Jesus, has Donnie got him on the Adderall?
Yeah, where they are 0.2% per thousand or 0.1% per thousand in places like Washington State. It is the reason why today the White House Coronavirus Task Force is calling on any American, first and foremost, if you're in the New York City metropolitan area or elsewhere, to take the guidelines that we issued and avoid non-essential travel. But for anyone in the New York metropolitan area who has traveled, our task force is encouraging you to monitor your temperature, be sensitive to symptoms, and we are asking anyone who has traveled out of the New York City metropolitan area to anywhere else in the country to self-isolate for 14 days. We have to deal with the New York City metropolitan area as a high-risk area. And for that reason, we're taking these steps and asking for the cooperation of the American people. Because of the spread in New York City, we will continue to surge resources. The president has described this. FEMA is coordinating with New York State for the arrival of the USS Comfort in just a matter of a few short weeks.
Weeks!
Over the next 24 hours, more than four.
You might remember that Donnie Dickhead said that it was going to be there
any day now, very soon, soon.
You realize why they want to end this so quickly, right? So he can start campaigning on having kicked the virus's ass. Ay, ay, ay. Well, let's move ahead in time and see if this makes any difference.
Made it clear that he hopes, in weeks, not months, to be able to open up the country. But let me make one last encouragement to every American. We will get to that day quicker if every American put into practice the president's coronavirus guidelines for our nation. 15 days to slow the spread. If every American will do this, I have no doubt that we will slow the spread, we will protect our most vulnerable, and we will heal our land. Thank you very much.
There we are, healing our land again. When it's not the land that needs to be healed, it's the people.
Reopen by Easter. You said earlier you would like to see churches packed on that day. My question is, you have two doctors on stage with you. Have either of them told you that's a realistic timeline?
I think we're looking at a timeline. We're discussing it. We had a very good meeting today. You know, if you add it all up, that's probably 9 days plus another 2.5 weeks. It's a period of time that's longer than the original 2 weeks. So we're going to look at it. We'll only do it if it's good. And maybe we do sections of the country. We do large sections of the country. That could be too. But you know, we're very much in touch with Tony and with Deborah
on everything we're doing. Who suggested that?
I just thought it was a beautiful time. It would be a beautiful time, a beautiful timeline. It's a great day.
He wants the churches packed on Easter.
A certain level of weeks from the time we started. And it happened to arrive. Actually, we were thinking in terms of sooner. I'd love to see it come even sooner, but I just think it would be a beautiful timeline. John?
Mr. President, if you look at what we've just seen in the last day or so, you've seen the number of known coronavirus cases in the country double in just 2 days. Another 95 people have died just in the last 24 hours. New York's governor is saying this is spreading like a bullet train across the country. And the governor of Louisiana is saying that his country, that his state may not be able to handle the cases that they're facing by early April. So what are you seeing in all of this that leads you to think that we could reopen by Easter or even earlier?
Sure. We're working with all of them. We can be talking about large sections of our country because there are sections of our country that you didn't talk about that are doing unbelievably well. They have very little incidence or problem, very small numbers. It's very possible that they won't be ever subject to what's happening in New York. New York is definitely a hot spot. There's no question about it. And you know what we're doing in New York to try and help. And I think we're doing an incredible job. We're going to have the hospitals up quickly, the medical centers also quickly. But we'll just have to see. We have to follow.
He's out of his mind.
We're going to look at that curve. We're going to see when it starts coming down. and we'll do the best job that can be done. John, please.
Question for you, Mr. President, Dr. Fauci, if we could. Just when looking at this idea of an Easter timeline, and I don't know that's probably flexible, what are the metrics by which you will make the decision as to whether you can say, yes, we can open up this area of the country, or no, we can't open up that area? I mean, will you be looking at disease numbers? Will you be looking at possible containment, isolation?
I think we'll be looking at a lot of things. We'll also be looking, again, at very large portions of our country. And I will be guided very much by Dr. Fauci and by Deborah and by some of the other professionals that work with both of you.
Deborah.
And we're going to see
what the hots for Deborah
will be. But that would certainly be, I think that's a goal that perhaps can happen, or at least for a very large portion of our country.
Dr. Fauci, since as the president said, you and Dr. Birx and others will be guiding him in making the decision, where are you now with this timeline, 19 days from now?
So, I mean, that's really very flexible. We just had a conversation with the president in the Oval Office talking about, you know, you can look at a date, but you've got to be very flexible. And on a literally day-by-day and week-by-week basis, you need to evaluate the feasibility of what you're trying to do. And, John, you asked for, you know, what kind of metrics, what kind of data. When you look at the country, I mean, obviously, no one is going to want to tone down things when you see what's going on in a place like New York City. I mean, that's just, you know, good public health practice and common sense. But the country is a big country, and there are areas of the country, and I refer to this in my opening remarks, that we really need to know more about what the penetrance is there. So if we do the kind of testing we were doing, and testing will always be associated by identification, isolation, and contact tracing, and you find after a period of time that there are areas that are very different from other areas of the country, you may not want to essentially treat it as a, just one force for the entire country, but look at flexibility in different areas. So I think people might get the misinterpretation.
He's trying to come up with a pacifier for a madman.
Like that. That's not going to happen. It's going to be looking at the data. And what we don't have right now that we really do need is we need to know what's going on in those areas of the country where there isn't an obvious outbreak. Is there something underneath the surface that says, wait a minute, you better be careful and really clamp down? Or what looks there that you don't really have to be as harsh as you are in other areas? So it's looking at information that up to this point, John, we never had. So it's a flexible situation.
Was New York becoming on more? Is New York becoming the epicenter?
Well, it certainly is by far the, if you call it hot, if you call it any word you want to use, it is at a level that, I was speaking to Tony before, it's a level that no place else is close. It's very unfortunate. You know, one of the things that's happened that we've done, I think, a really good job on, I think that it's...
You think he's even worried about his grandkids? Just curious.
I learned it actually this afternoon. In 8 days, because we kept hearing about South Korea, and they had a very tough time at the beginning, if you remember. In 8 days, we're doing more testing than they've done in 8 weeks.
Why?
That's a tremendous turn. And with our testing, it's going exponentially. It's going up, up, up every day. So we're going to be able to do things with this very highly sophisticated testing. And it's also the test.
By the way, in case anybody's curious, he hasn't the first foggy idea of what exponential means.
Of a very high-quality test. That makes a big difference. It also makes a big difference even in terms of opening, because we're going to see those areas like the hot spots. But New York City definitely is a very hot spot.
Steve, when you talk about areas that you could open up, what specifically are you looking at? What states? Are you talking about out west?
Well, you can talk about the Farm Belt. Take a look at the Farm Belt. Take a look at areas out west. Look at big sections of Texas.
Places where he desperately wants to hold a rally.
The great governor of Texas, they've done a fantastic job out there.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about Texas, where yesterday, over on, I think, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and this is not a joke, Dan Patrick said that older Americans should be willing to die for the economy for their grandchildren. I'm not making that up. that really, really happened. And earlier today, on the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda electro rally that they gave him to make him feel better and stop tantruming. Well, it didn't stop the tantrums, but it did cause him to say that we don't shut down the country over car wrecks. Oh, fuck. And I give props to Steve from Georgistan for anticipating that argument a couple of Fridays ago. Oy. Well, I can't find the clip of Dan Patrick of Texas saying that America, older Americans should be willing to die for the capitalist economy, but it happened. It happened. You know who Terrence McNally is? He's a playwright and a librettist and a screenwriter. He has four Tonys to his credit, as well as an Emmy. He died today at 81 from complications from COVID. He wrote Love, Valor, Compassion. He wrote Masterclass. He wrote Kiss of the Spider Woman. He wrote Ragtime. And he suffered, he had been a lung cancer survivor and had lived with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. He was in Florida, and the coronavirus took him. Lin-Manuel Miranda said, he was a giant in our world who straddled plays and musicals deftly, grateful for his staggering body of work and his unfailing kindness. He was an absolute gentleman, and his commitment to the theater was unwavering. That was James Corden. He will be missed by so many of us. And only hours before, veteran Afro jazz legend Manu Dibango passed away from COVID-19. Well, I mean, maybe Trump can at least get some church services. The Daily Shit Show is now over, mercifully. Can I ask a rather superficial question, Bob? Asks Brother Deacon Asa. Why is it that we hear so many photos being snapped at these so-called press conferences? What feature of those putrid old faces haven't we seen before that a new photo is going to help us see? It's all just documentation. They're documenting the moment, one photo of sometime 2 or 3 days ago. And it really, eventually, it can prove useful, as you show, for instance, the slow and miserable descent into madness of Nitwit Nero. You can compare a photo from today to a photo from yesterday to a photo from last week. And it's just a matter of, it's a matter of record keeping. It is, what do they say about journalism? The first draft of history. Infuriating, says Flavio. This is the guy who thought nothing of shutting the government down over his fucking wall. James in Illinois, the exponentials. The
exponentials are incredible. Believe me, incredible.
I think, says Ron in Raleigh, shouldn't the disease vector in chief go home to New York City to bring aid and comfort to his fellow New Yorkers? P.S. Give us some relief, please. It's over now, Ron. It's okay. But I was thinking the same thing. You know, he likes to go to places where there have been tornadoes, and he likes to go and throw paper towels at people after hurricanes. I can't think of anything more presidential than he could do, than to go to a hospital that's really, really dealing with COVID-19 and show solidarity with the suffering of of his natal city. Yeah. As to the phrase high-quality tests, Steve in New York says, not like those shitty low-quality tests in South Korea. Yep, right. Ah, there it is. Thank you, Ralphs and Lee. There's the Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick. Dickhead. I mean, it's a technical term. I hope you understand. I don't just throw that around gratuitously. It's a philosophical term.
You dick.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the clip. Yeah, speaking of historical records, let's get this in the historical record that is this program. Over on the Fox News TV show of white supremacist Tucker Carlson, Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, in fact, showed up and said that, well, the whole country was going to collapse and, I don't know, fall into the center of the earth for all I know. If we don't reopen the government.
Mm-hmm. Living in fear of is what's happening to this country. And, you know, Tucker, no one reached out to me and said, as a senior citizen, are you willing to take a chance on your survival in exchange for keeping the America that all America loves for your children and grandchildren? And if that's the exchange, I'm all in. And that doesn't make me noble or brave or anything like that.
No, it makes
you an
asshole.
I just think there are lots of grandparents out there in this country, like me, I have 6 grandchildren, that what we all care about and what we love more than anything are those children. And I want to, you know, live smart and see through this, but I don't want the whole country to be sacrificed. And that's what I see. I've talked to hundreds of people, Tucker, and just in the last week, and making calls all the time. And everyone says pretty much the same thing, that we can't lose our whole country. We're having an economic collapse. I'm also a small businessman. I understand it. And I talk with business people all the time, Tucker. And my heart is lifted tonight by what I heard the president say, because we can do more than, you know, one thing at a time. We can do 2 things. So,
yeah, we can tank the market and reinitiate social contact and have them both go down in flames. You're right, you fucking moron, you titanic intellect. We can do 2 things at one time. We can fuck up 2 things at one time. It's just that an intelligent person wouldn't want to do that.
Well, you know, my message is that let's get back to work. Let's get back to living. Let's be smart about it. And those of us who are 70 plus, we'll take care of ourselves, but don't sacrifice the country. Don't do that. Don't ruin this great American dream.
So you're basically saying that this disease could take your life, but that's not the scariest thing to you. There's something that would be worse than dying.
Yeah, I mean, having his stock portfolio take a fucking hit. God almighty. Oh, Sparky reminds me, they won't let him into the hospital, Bob. No visitors for COVID. Well, he's the president. He's a law unto himself. Remember, he could just march right in there and nobody could arrest him because the Department of Justice says the president of the United States is above the law. A real president would go and do that. Let's see. How about, did you notice?
The Farm Bill, Texas.
He's thinking about where he wants to go and hold one of his stupid fucking rallies because he's pissing himself because he's not able to bask in the reflected light of the maggot ignorante. Well, I guess that's a philosophical discussion. Flavio says, please stop airing these demented pressers. Show Andrew Cuomo's morning conferences, the de facto president of the United States now. Well, he's not the de facto president of the United States, Flavio. He's not. He's the governor of New York. just like Gavin Newsom, the other another competent governor, is governor of California, and Jay Inslee, another competent governor, is the governor of Washington. But they're not the president of the United States. And I realize that that there is an argument to be made that we should not share that. But for the most part, what I played were the two so-called experts, Dr. Birx,
Deborah,
and Dr. Fauci. And there is historical value in watching them struggle, knowing what they're dealing with, watching them struggle to protect the people of the United States from the president of the United States. Because this program does exist as a sort of sort of archive. We've documented life in these United States and around the world for over 16 years here. And to pretend that this madness doesn't exist is to waltz at the doomsday ball, I suppose. Or, as Al Stewart sang, waltz into 1939. Lee in New York says, I want to see the Texas lieutenant governor care for the COVID-19 patients. No need to give him even a mask. He's willing to die anyway. Yeah, get in there, bub. Oh, but if you say to Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, you first, motherfucker. Well, he's gonna have, you know, for a 70-plus-year-old guy, he sure does have some Reagan-esque dark hair, just a little bit of graying around the temples. As to showing solidarity with his natal city, Brother Deacon Asa says, better yet, he can go to Kroger's and toss bundles of toilet paper at the patrons. That'd be a great photo op. And I think there's some truth in the fact that he knows he has to be reelected. Otherwise, as Scott pointed out, was it Scott who wrote in and said he may have to go and spend some time in the Gray Bar Hotel? I confess that one of my fondest fantasies is us getting a Democratic president on January 20th, 2021. And the minute that president's hand comes off the Bible, the cuffs go on Donald Trump. Perp walk, perp walk, perp walk, frog march, frog march, frog march. It's not going to happen. But a guy can dream, right? Two things? I got two things for him, says Ron in Raleigh. He can eat shit and die. He's also put forth the idea that abortions should be suspended because they're unnecessary procedures. Oh, dear. Evil fucks. And I mean that. Evil fucks. All right. We're well over halfway into the program. A big thanks to Samson for jumping in. We are only $45 from meeting our fundraising goal for the evening and helping to keep this program stumbling forward as we deal with whatever it is that is coming toward us. Go ahead, Jason. In Florida. Oh, wait. Hold on. No sooner than I did that, Jason, the godforsaken Bluetooth dropped. So just give me one second, please. We'll be there in a sec. Oh, for pity's sakes. All right. Hopefully this will work now. Okay, you there, Jason?
Yes, sir.
All right, good deal. Welcome to the program.
It's been a while since I've talked to you.
Yeah, it has been.
I choose the apocalypse to call, right?
Well, it happens.
I'm coming to talk about my wife, actually, because she's starting to sound like Alex Jones.
That's never a good thing.
She is a evolutionary microbiologist. And she says that, like, these viruses for eons have thinned the herd out, she calls it, thinned the herd. And it was a natural thing until we developed medicine to where it, I'm probably explaining, I'll explain it good, but I'll do my best. To where, you know, when we got overpopulation and viruses would come through that kill the people off and the people would get down to a sustainable level in the and something that the world could support. And well, she says, you know, now that we've had all these medicines and stuff that can prolong our lives and save our lives, that, you know, the world's vastly overpopulated. And Now she says, after listening to some of the stuff about Trump and that he knew back in December, you know, she says they knew. They knew what they were doing. They let the virus grow to wipe out the older population because we're expensive, being that we're on Social Security, Medicaid, we're in the hospital, and we have to take all kind of drugs. And, You know the part that worries me the most is she's making sense.
Oh, I know it's a sort of a Malthusian argument, and
yes.
What we do know from a factual basis is that about mid-December is when China finally stopped suppressing and
right.
made the virus available for study to the world. But, you know, for me, if you use Occam's razor, you know, Occam's razor says that the simplest answer is almost always the correct one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you understand the Chinese government to be the authoritarian, repressive regime that it is, then it is far more likely that they simply thought that they could manage it on their own and they would suppress it and they would have a little bit of a shutdown and they would and they knew that they had the Lunar New Year holiday coming up and so everything was going to shut down anyway and that way they could keep it from getting outside of China and causing China to lose face. I know that's a loaded phrase and it comes from the concepts of Asian philosophy and religion, but the loss of status, the Romans were familiar with it. They would have called it a loss of dignitas, dignity. And so I realize it may feel like it's working out that way, but there's really no way to tailor a disease to just wipe out old people. And we're finding out now that there are more and more young people or younger people who are also being affected by this. There are children right now who are fighting for their lives. There's a brilliant young 40-something lawyer named David Latt who was in perfect health, and he's on a ventilator now. You see what I'm saying?
I gather that, but it's just, you know, it's like, you know, either Trump is okay, so we know Trump's a complete asshole, buffoon, but, you know.
Well, he's also, don't sell him short. He's also malevolent. He's he's malignant.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
He is his own personal death cult.
Yes, I, you know, and, but he let it, He let it grow.
He absolutely did.
He's still really doing nothing.
Right.
And people, what I don't understand is people even try to defend this nutbag, you know. And I've heard this argument already. Well, the old people, it's just killing the old people. I mean, all that stuff. I live like right by Daytona Beach. They still haven't closed the beaches. Still, in Daytona Beach.
Jesus, I thought the beaches had been closed.
No, not Volusia County. Oh, no.
Oh, they're leaving it up to a county-by-county basis. I saw where...
yes, sir.
I saw where Clearwater Beach had been closed. So,
yes.
So Ron...
County-by-county.
Yeah, Ron Monkey up DeKlantis has not taken any executive action.
No, sir. He hasn't done anything, except he comes on and talks like he's doing something, and he's really doing nothing. This is the weirdest state to live in. I mean, I'm fortunate. I work at NASA, and for some reason, they have classed our work as national defense and security or something. I don't know. So we have to go to work. It's the damnedest thing. And they have these people come by. There's a whole new industry down here, though, with the people coming and sanitizing your work areas. And it's different.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine it. And the thing is, they can sanitize all they want to, but there are still elements of human behavior that you have to overcome. I know this is not the same as working at NASA, but I was at the grocery store today. That's really not working at NASA, believe you me.
It's kind of the same.
And because I got those pork butts to make barbecue, I had to have a head of cabbage so I could make the hot slaw that goes with it. So, you know the little plastic bags that you put produce in at the grocery store?
Yes,
well, I reached up and zipped one of those out and tore it off. And then I was about to do what I always do, because have you ever tried to open one of those little bastards? You know,
I threw them on the ground.
They kind of get, you know, they got a lot of static electricity to them or something. And so usually the SOP for that is you lick your index finger and your thumb, and then then the bag will come open. And I was getting ready to do that, and my inner Warner Brothers cartoon voice said, "What are you doing?" And so then I began to carefully try to prize apart the edges of that little itsy bitsy thin bag, because I could have just taken the cabbage and put it in my basket. But you know, those little primate behaviors are hard to fucking break.
Yes. My wife's kind of like OCD, and, you know, she's always like, if she gets out of the car and goes into a store and puts a hand on the door and opens it or whatever, she carries hand sanitizer in her car long before hand sanitizer was cool. And, you know, now she's like all the time, "Welcome to my world," you know.
Yeah, because she works in healthcare, right?
Right. And so, you know, and I was talking with you the other day. I said, you know, in the last 2 weeks, I've washed my hands more than I did the previous 40 years before that.
it's probably sadly true.
Oh, you know, it is. You know, I'm just an old pipe fitter that, you know, got lucky, did some schooling, and now I'm at NASA. And it sounds good, but it's kind of still the same job.
Well, I mean, pipe fitting, just about everywhere. Well, I imagine even to a certain extent in space, it's still pipe fitting.
Yes, it's a lot slower and more critical when you're, because what we do is we build like those big launch towers you see that the rocket stands next to.
Yeah.
And then so they fuel it that way. Of course, they don't fuel the rocket till it stands up, and they only start fueling like a half hour before they. Anyway, and so that's what we do. We put all that piping and. And I pretty much just QC it all. I don't really put it in anymore. I just have to kind of say, yeah, that's done correctly, and move on from there. But, and you know who we work for? You'll really hate who we work for.
Oh, I can't wait.
Jeff Bezos. For Blue Origin. He's building a...
Oh, okay, sure, yeah.
Yeah. So, some of the actual NASA projects are shut down. The government-funded projects are shut down. All the Air Force projects are open. And SpaceX is open, which is... I can't remember the guy's name. It runs SpaceX. And then and Bezos' project, the Blue Origin, is open. And well, that's the one I'm working on. It's called Launchpad 36, I think it is. And they say they're not going to shut it down. And the Air Force is like, this is critical mission stuff, and so they're going to, you know, keep us there. I guess until everybody gets sick or something.
Oh God! I hope that doesn't happen. But you know, if they would shut down Florida, it would get, because remember, I mean, the old saying is God's waiting room.
Absolutely.
The risk to the elderly population of Florida.
Newlywed or nearly dead.
Yeah, newlywed or right.
That's what they always. That's what they always say. Newlyweds are nearly dead. That's Florida. And they really need to shut it down because there's still a lot of people on the road, and there's still a lot of people, like, in the grocery stores. I live in an area that's more like Alabama-stan than it is Florida, you know. Like, the coast is totally different. I live interior Florida, which is more like living in Alabama-stan or Mississippi-stan. And so the people are just like, you know... This is all just a Democratic hoax.
Oh, geez, yeah. There's a lot of redneckery, in parts.
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
The whole panhandle is just I mean, there's a reason we refer to the beaches down there as the Redneck Riviera.
Yes. Yes. You know, you get 20 miles off of the beaches, pretty much up and down the coast. And when you're in interior Florida, it changes back to Panhandle Florida. Until you get around the big metropolitan areas like Orlando, Tampa type of thing. But
yeah,
everything in between is a redneck as it gets.
Oh, I saw a photograph of Fort Lauderdale International Airport the other day, and it looked like a scene from a horror movie. Yeah, people shoulder to shoulder, elbow to elbow, and trying to get the hell away or get the hell out, all because of the airport screw up from this gang of screw ups.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, my personal opinion on what. And I've been saying this for years and years, is America's not really going to change until we're all standing in line for rock soup and stale bread. And it needs to look exactly like it did in the 30s. Until that happens, America's not really going to change. But I believe at this point, we're headed there. We're absolutely headed there.
Well, one thing, and I don't think I'm incorrect on this, because of... that old phrase, states' rights. The states that
I love how you say that.
Yeah. Well, you have to say it with a southern accent.
Yeah, I love that. You do good. I laugh every time I hear you say that.
But because of it, the individual governors are in charge of when to lift or not lift their own shutdowns. And so Easter can come and Nitwit Nero can say, okay, we're open for business. And it in some ways, the governors can tell him to go and Trump himself. And there's nothing he can do about it.
I hope they do.
Well, I'm hoping, I was looking at that website that so many folks have sent along to me. It's called covidactnow.org. And we need a whole lot more in terms of the color coding of the states. We need a whole lot more green states, and we need all the red states to at least go orange. Because all of those red states, Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Missouri, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Idaho, well, they're the ones who are going to who are going to turn this into a toxic nightmare for the rest of the country.
Yeah, I believe so. And it's scary because I think that, like they say, oh, we're just going to turn the switch on and the country's going to open up. Well, a lot of these people before this couldn't take a $400 hit. Now you're talking, you're going to sit them at home for months, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, and they ain't worked, ain't had a check, and now you're going to tell them, okay, go spend money. And, well, that ain't going to happen, right? So how are they going to open up these restaurants? How are they going to open up these stores? And then you're going to have the scare factor for the people that are going to be working and go back to work. Well, they're not going to want to spend their money like they used to because they're going to be wanting to put it away for the next pandemic, right?
Because that's the other thing we have to bear in mind. I'm glad you brought it up. Singapore had been fairly successful in flattening the curve, so they relaxed their shutdown. Guess what happened? It came roaring back with a terrible vengeance, and so they reimposed their shutdown. Now that's Singapore, one of the most authoritarian regimes in the world. Imagine, you know, you can get the hide beaten off of you for chewing gum in public in Singapore under ordinary circumstances. Mm-hmm. So imagine what happens if President Shithead gets his way here's the quote from earlier today.
Look, Easter's a very special day for me, and I see it sort of in that timeline that I'm thinking about. And I say, wouldn't it be great to have all of the churches full? You know, the churches aren't allowed, essentially, to have much of a congregation there. So I think Easter Sunday, and you'll have packed churches all over our country. I think it would be a beautiful time.
Because he also knows that the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians are his base. And he knows that the preachers will preach the holy, sacred gospel of Trump from the pulpit on that day. He's transparently simple. There's no real challenge to figuring him out, Jason.
No, he's a simpleton for sure.
And one of the reasons that I kind of take issue with your wife's theory about bumping off the old folks is because he'd be bumping off his own electorate. He can't win without the boomer vote.
Well, my wife is English, so, but you know, when you listen to her explain it, it gets damn spooky. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I gotta tell her, don't talk to me, you know, because you know she's a scientist, right? And she makes a damn good, probably much better than I do, but she makes a damn good argument. You know, and
it may wind up playing out that way if these stupid bastards get their way. But yeah. if to go back and to use some of the vocabulary from back in the days of 9/11, you remember when the 9/11 truthers split into two camps, and there were the my hoppers and the lie hoppers. The my hoppers, that my hop stands for made it happen on purpose. That's the people who believe that George W. Bush put on his little black trench coat and his little black boots and his little black hat and went and planted little black bombs all over the World Trade Center. That's the my hoppers. Then there are the lie hoppers, and lie hoppers stands for let it happen on purpose.
Let it happen, man.
And so I think maybe if I understand your wife's position, she may be saying that they let this get loose on purpose.
Yes.
And I, that's yes. not,
and and let it fester and grow and say it's a hoax and let it, because Trump will be the first one to tell you, oh, it just affects old people. So he's thinking you're going to get rid of all the old people, get all this Social Security money back, save all this Medicare money, you know,
and give it to his buddies.
Yeah, his criminal friends.
But he doesn't. But
and
he
he's
doesn't.
He's still going to do it.
But again, I say if that was the case, it would be political suicide because he cannot win without the people that he would be killing.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm 50. I'm the same age as you. I'm 57, and there's a lot of people my age that like this motherfucker.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, where you are, I'm not at all surprised. I mean, it's the same here, but it doesn't play out that way. You know, it doesn't play out that way in other parts of the country.
Oh, I hope so, because you know, if I go on what it looks like around here, we're in for miserable 4 years coming up.
we can't.
You know,
we won't be able to tolerate it.
No, I mean, I do my part. I went and voted for the primary, you know, which I found was odd that they would let us vote, but whatever. And, you know, and I voted Bernie. I'm going to, you know, and listen, if you listen to what they're calling for now, they're like, they're enacting Bernie's policies.
Well, you know, there's that old saying that a prophet is never welcome in his own land.
Yes.
And
I mean, I've been able and fortunate now to vote for Bernie 2 times. I voted for him both times that I could, you know, and I used to listen in to him on Hartman all those years when he was at, was it Bernie? At
Lunch with Bernie, yeah.
Well, Lunch with Bernie, yeah, that's what it was. And, you know, I'm a hard left, atheist socialist, I mean, you know, and living in a redneck, you know, if it wasn't for like me and my wife wanted a farm, you know, I wouldn't be here, you know, but we wanted a farm and with donkeys and cattle and everything. But everybody around us, it's scary. You know, they got their Trump flags. They got their Trump shirts.
Oh, dude, Florida is just flat West Virginia, and West Virginia is just hilly Florida, okay? It's the same people.
Yeah. It is the same people. I mean, it's like, I have to buy hay. We haven't had rain for like a month. I mean, it's terrible. I don't know what happened to the rain in Florida. But we have to buy hay now for the animals, and we have to buy it from this guy, and he comes out in his tractor, and he's got his Trump 2020 hat on. And my wife, it's all she can do not to kill this guy. And I say, look, we just want the hay. You know, it's everywhere around here. It's like a fucking disease.
God.
And, you know, I don't know how you're ever going to stop it. You know, they set up on the sides of the roads with their little, you know, like a little flea market looking thing, and they saw all this Trump paraphernalia, from Trump hats to T-shirts to sunglasses. I mean, I stopped and looked at one day, and I'm thinking, who would even buy this cheap China crap to begin with, but who would buy it to sell it, you know?
Well, after 3 years, I mean, I see it in the grocery store and stuff. After 3 years, I'm like, what the heck? You know, I see somebody with maggot apparel on, and I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing in my head, exactly. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You know, this man has, you know, and with that other governor lieutenant governor from Florida coming out, it's like, don't you understand? They want you dead. You know, they don't want to help you or anything. They just said it, die. You know, if you're over 70, die so the younger people can live.
Comfortably.
We don't want to kill the economy.
I mean, the younger people are going to, you know, younger people are going to live, but they want the younger people to live comfortably with a stock portfolio.
So they can fucking steal it. It's like when they crash the economy. They sell their stocks really high. They crash it.
Yeah, it's almost like there's a cycle. Like every time a Democrat builds up a little bit of money, a Republican comes along and steals everything. Jason, I hate it, but the Bluetooth has done me in again. I hope we'll talk soon, and it won't be quite so long the next time. And until then, you know, just try to keep your wits about you, and you know, tell your lovely wife to breathe. Because, you know, natural selection, as our buddy Jude reminds us, natural selection is a real thing, but it's also not something that is particularly easily controlled by the hands of humankind. Jason, take care, my friend. It's good talking to you, and I hope we'll talk again soon. That was Jason calling from Florida. Thanks for the call, Jason. Much appreciated. Clarence writes in from South Carolina, Stan, subject line, human behavior. Bob, you're so right about people's behavior. I'm a trucker, and my fellow brethren do not follow any safety protocols that have been suggested. I also think Dr. Fauci and his team should look at the supply chain population, i.e. drivers, UPS, FedEx, Amazon, Walmart, also shippers, receivers, warehouse workers, etc. I have a hunch that this population is spreading the virus. The priority should be second to the healthcare workers. Without healthy drivers to move commerce, all bets are off. I think the so-called leadership do not want the answer about transportation contamination. That would be the end of the bottom line. Just thinking, Bob. Well, I'm glad you're just thinking, Clarence, because we've got some Nijinskys in the White House who the only thing they're thinking about is whether or not they can make a little bit more grift off of the current situation. A few emails rolling in from Kyle and Albert and the like. Albert asks, among other things, can we have Dope 45 held accountable for all the corona deaths? Then we'd have a valid reason to send him to either Leavenworth or the Supermax in Colorado. Yeah, he could hang out next to the Unabomber and the Blind Sheik. And adds, several years ago, someone stuck a wad of gum on a Singapore tram car door. The door got severely stuck. It cost a lot to fix the door, so a law was passed. Possession of gum will get you a 20-year prison sentence. It may not be that harsh, but still, they don't take kindly to gum chewing in Singapore. Dennis in Columbus says, dear leaders, Secret Service Detail, otherwise known as the Witless Protection Program, keep up the great work, Bob. You're helping me maintain some semblance of semi-sanity during this corona cluster. Yeah, I'm trying. I'm trying, Dennis. I really am. And Kyle in Kentucky, Stan, says, okay, I don't like Trump, but I don't believe that he or even his fucked-up regime would intentionally try to kill off a segment of the population intentionally, because that would, one, involve having an actual plan. Well, there's always that. And two, make him look bad, which is all he cares about. I mean, he already looks bad, but would he do it on purpose? No. And, see, that's the problem. Sometimes fuck-ups can be as deadly as intentional acts. That's why we have terms like negligence out there. Randy in PA says, you know the old saying, a Trump supporter and his money are soon parted. And what's the variation on that? A fool and his money or some party? Well, in Kentucky, Stan, and you knew this was bound to happen, according to the Louisville Courier-Journal, the number of coronavirus cases in Kentucky has jumped to 163. They had 39 new cases just today. And according to Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, who is sane, at least one of the cases is linked to a coronavirus party. No, really. A lot of people got together to deliberately spread the disease amongst themselves, the idea being, well, you know, we'll get it, we'll get over it, and then we'll have immunity. Makes me wonder if former Kentucky governor and second most loathed man in Kentucky, maybe third, Matt Bevin. Remember Matt Bevin when his kids were little? He found out a neighbor down the street that those kids had chicken pox, so he took his own kids down there and wallered them all over the other kids so that they'd get chicken pox because Matt Bevin is an anti-vaxxer, the intellectual midget freak. Well, that was called a chicken pox party. So now these assholes have had a coronavirus party. And Dave sent the story along to me. Governor Andy Beshear said, anyone who goes to something like this may think that they are indestructible, but it's someone else's loved one that they're going to hurt. This is something that no one should be doing across the Commonwealth. How about we find out who those people were, Governor, and charge them with a crime? Because what they did was criminal. It was depraved heart behavior. It was willful, wanton, and reckless. And they would be chargeable. And they damned well deserve it. Governor Beshear continued, we're battling for the health, even the lives, of our parents and our grandparents. Don't be so callous as to intentionally go to something and expose yourself to something that can kill other people. We ought to be much better than that. We all owe each other a duty to protect each other. Daggummit, Governor! Do you know what you're governor of? Kentucky Stan, Governor. Some of y'all may be better than that. Maybe more than half of y'all are better than that, at least the ones who went out and voted. But they also elected you because Matt Bevin's a turd. Now, before this thing gets any further out of hand than it is, we better understand who we are as a people. And we are not better than that. There are more people in this country who believe in demons than acknowledge the reality of evolution. There are more people in this country who think that humanity is flawed because the very first woman had a conversation with a gossipy Gabon viper than think we actually landed on the moon. There are going to be some learning opportunities that come out of this. And one of those learning opportunities is going to be the opportunity for us to learn that we should probably never say under any circumstances about anything, we are better than this. There is a segment of this population that only learns punitively. And so if you really want to teach Kentuckians to be better than that, to not throw virus parties, you have to prosecute and punish them. Note coming in from Terrace. Impeach and remove, reason number 8,000. King Sicko tried to buy a team working on a vaccine so it would be available to the U.S. only. What if Obama or Hillary did that? Jesus Christ! Flush Flimball would have a baby right on top of the microphone if Hillary or... Yeah. He tried to leverage the purchase of a German firm and keep any vaccine only for the United States. And only, you know, for a price. In case you were wondering, the United States Postal Service, which is in some deep shit, and if it doesn't get some financial help, will probably be bankrupt before the year is out. Steve from Georgistan reminds us, the United States Postal Service does not supply any personal protective equipment whatsoever. They have to buy their own. It's tragic, Bob. They take the postal oath, and most postal workers take that oath very seriously. They want to serve the public in these dire times, but they are treated as if they are disposable commodities. It's sad. Yeah, it is. And it's also by design. You got to remember, the Postal Service is in the mess that it is because the Republicans forbade the Postal Service from running unfunded liabilities. They have to fully fund their pension plan at all times. That means expansion, growth, anything. No. Everything goes into the pension plan, leaving the Postal Service teetering constantly on the brink of disaster because ultimately the Republicans want to have done with the United States Postal Service, and they want to break it into pieces and sell it off a little bit to UPS here, a little bit to FedEx there, a little bit to whatever the other freight carriers are. If you don't like 55 cents to send a letter in 3 days' time, wait till you're paying FedEx to do it and doing it 10 bucks at a pop. Yeah. And then there's, and it really won't wait until tomorrow, prayer meeting. There's Jerry Falwell. Titanic prick. Asshole. I think I mentioned that he was planning on turning Jerry Falwell U into a viral stew. Stew U. By bringing students back on campus. Well, now the city fathers and mothers of Lynchburg, Virginia, have said that he was something less than truthful in that entire circumstance. That he told them one thing and then began doing another. They're claiming outright that they were misled by this fine, fine, upstanding Christian man. Falwell said he got, not only got permission, but he was thanked by the city. But according to the Daily Beast, when Falwell told the Liberty University News Service, which is his captive propaganda arm, he said, "They thanked us for making that decision." And he wanted to get his students back as soon as we can, the ones that want to come back. Well, the Daily Beast checked in with city manager of Lynchburg, Bonnie Svercek. And she said, yeah, I thanked him for moving to online classrooms. But he led us to believe that he was not going to have students back on in-person classes and in residence halls after spring break. According to the Daily Beast report, neither she nor Lynchburg Mayor Trini Tweedy said they signed off on Falwell's decision to reopen Liberty's dorms. All Falwell said to him was that he would move to an online platform. Ms. Svercek said, he added that some food services would remain open for on-campus international students who have not gone home, and some lab classes, and the School of Aviation will continue. The mayor and I thanked him for this shift that we believed meant that students would be told not to come back to campus with a few exceptions. One senior at Liberty University, otherwise known as Falwell U, who remains nameless because that senior will be retaliated against because Jerry Falwell Jr. is a vindictive dickhead. And again, a reminder, that is a technical term.
You dick!
Yeah. That student said, seems like he wants everything to be open pretty quickly following Trump. I saw this morning that Trump wants businesses to reopen. Jerry literally follows anything that Trump says. So at this point, everything is up in the air. But God, I hope Virginia Governor Ralph Northam has the common sense that God gave a stomped Gosling. And, we'll ring Liberty University with law enforcement and make it a no-in, no-out proposition. Otherwise, Jerry Falwell will essentially be allowed to try to kill a significant portion of the people of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Jesus. Wow. Oh, and by the way, program, you know, we're into the third hour of the program. We got $45 left to finish off fundraising for this evening and keep us on track to get the bills paid. $45. It would be intensely helpful if we could knock that out and be even for prayer meeting Wednesday. The deacons have been getting the night off lately. I don't want to have to bring them back for some sort of miraculous thing. I mean, no. But, you know, 4 at 10 and 1 at 5 or 9 at 5 or whatever. And we'll keep this going. And thank you very kindly to Lady B and Samson for getting us as close as we are. Thank you very kindly indeed. Let's run over and check in with Scott. Yo, Scott.
Yo, Bob. How are you?
I see you survived your trip to Ralph's.
Oh, yeah. That was an adventure and a half. You know, I got out of there. I only had about a dozen things on my shopping list. And I got out of there not only upright and above ground and, you know, healthy and stuff, but I only missed two items that were not available on the shelves. A roll of paper towels. If Trump's going to start that throwing of paper towels bit, he needs to start at my house. I've been to Ralph's twice and have yet to find a single roll of paper towels. The other thing
is
I
that,
walked
is,
out...
Is that Ralph's the only thing that's within striking distance for you?
Well, there's a Vaughn's, which is like two blocks away from here. But Vaughn's used to be a pretty good grocery chain. And maybe it's just this low store. I just don't. They give me the icky stickies or something. You know, there's just something about it. You know, maybe it's over an old Native American burial ground. I just don't like even going in there. I would rather risk life and limb on the bus going to Ralph's. Simply because I prefer the shopping experience, Bob. But so I didn't get my paper towels. And the other thing I didn't get, and I have been jonesing for these damn things, they're addictive, a can of B&M baked beans. I don't know what they put in those beans, crack or something, but I love them. I just love them. But anyway, when you were talking about your cabbage buying experience and the deal trying to get the little produce bag open, and see, I think we are learning. This thing is instructing us on
we're getting better.
We're
getting better.
Like licking your...
We're getting better at social distancing in the store. I noticed that people are beginning to take it seriously.
Yeah.
And when the hillbillies start taking it seriously, you know that it must be taking root.
Well, one thing I noticed in terms of overriding automatic behavior, and I may not be alone in this. I'm sure there are others listening within the sound of my voice who are finding out that this is true, and they'll recognize it the moment I say it. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, whatever it is, Didn't we all used to spin that toilet tissue roll like you're on Wheel of Fortune, you know, to dispense it? But now, in the age of COVID-19, we turn that fucker like we're cracking a safe. You know, the only thing missing is...
I was never a roll spinner.
Oh, God, yeah. Children were famous. I'll get in trouble for saying this. Well, I won't specify that. I have a relative who, as a child, would take the end of the toilet paper a roll, walk out of the bathroom into the hallway where the bathroom was, and then walk back and tear it off. And that's the amount that he had used for his wiping purposes.
That must have driven your mother batshit.
Oh, the fact that my mother died relatively early should come as no surprise to anyone, given me and the rest of the brood. We were, oh, God. She came by every one of those gray hairs quite honestly.
Now, see, to be fair, yeah. I have daughters, and again, to save the hate mail, it just is what it is. I've complained about it for years. I have daughters who pull toilet paper like a boxer wrapping up his hand before putting on the glove.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I've seen that too.
and it's just, I mean, I know what we're talking about and everything, and I understand, but really? Because it wasn't how I was raised. Maybe that's because I was raised by people who knew what it was to have to tear pages out of the Montgomery Ward catalog. I don't know.
Or corn cobs. A lot of people in places use corn cobs. He had two bushel baskets. He had a basket of white ones and a basket of brown ones. You use a brown one, then use a white one to see if you need another brown one. That's you.
Well, there went dinner in the mountain time zone, Scott. Can't thank you enough.
It's kiss dinner goodbye everywhere, you know? But... you know what the leading cause of death is increasingly here in this country?
Do tell.
Ass hattery and nut bucketry. They've reprogrammed the computers at coroner's offices all over the country to include that cause of death, that shorthand for our state of stupid behavior. Ass hattery and nut bucketry. What did he die of? Ass hattery and nut bucketry. Mark my words, Bob. It ain't gonna. That's going to. The virus spread is a trend line. This is also the trend line. Those kids last week, and you played the audio. Those kids on spring break down in Florida, frolicking on the fucking beach. They should be horsewhipped. But who can lift a horse in today's world? We're all tuckered out from trying to.
By the way, I should let you know you just got a note from Fab.
Okay.
And it's a rather terse note. I was enjoying my chili, Scott.
I'm sorry. I did not think. That's the problem. I could be president. I say shit without thinking. Jeez. Vote for me. Oh, man.
And
I don't know. You know who?
let's see. Let me just check in on a couple of things. Randy in PA says you should try Bush's Country Barbecue Beans. If you can't get your preferred brand, Randy seems to think highly of those. By the way, Vermont is finally doing the right thing. Jeremy writes in. Vermont will go into lockdown tomorrow at 5 p.m. till April 15th, extended if needed. I think it's going to be needed.
That's right, Nebo. When it comes to sickness, we don't fool around.
And got a note here from Lady B. I was writing this earlier. Sorry it's late. You know, I normally don't like those shows that try to dive deep into a psychopath's psyche. I mean, I did read and watch the movie Silence of the Lambs. Can you still hear the lambs, Clarice? And I'm a huge fan of Stephen King. I was really into the psychological horror genres for a while, but then I realized I was tired of excuses. I was tired of everybody having a reason for doing something horrific. I figured folks like Dylan Roof and the Aurora mass shooter James Holmes weren't worth studying because why should we?
They're psychopaths. They murdered human beings for no good reason. Bury them under the jail and let's move on. But with Donald Trump, I would love to see what history books have to say about him, especially knowing what we know about Hitler, Mussolini, and other sociopathic dictators. We've learned so much about psychology since Sigmund Freud. Surely shit like Hitler and Mussolini can't happen again, especially in America. So studying Trump, that's going to be an interesting case. A lot of embarrassing truths about America will come out, but to this day, I got to know one thing. What type of person can listen to him today and still want to vote for him? Lady, signed Lady, the stand wasn't supposed to be an instruction manual, B. And as always, she brings her A game, and her points are well taken. But the what kind of person can still listen to him and want to vote for him? The kind of person who doesn't care. The kind of person who puts more value in having their biases confirmed, their hatreds uplifted, than anything having to do with their fellow human beings.
Lady B raises a good point. Who at this point, a long last senator, have you no sense of decency, who at this point listens to this fool? Well, I think it's three groups, three main groups. There might be some subsections, but I think here are the three main groups. You've got the religious nuts, who the bottom line for them is, well, it don't matter how bad it gets, because the worse it gets, the sooner Jesus will get here. You've got that group. And then you've got the group of people who don't want to be inconvenienced or told anything other than that which will tickle their ears group. You have the folks who have forgotten what it is to be an American who is dedicated to the proposition that we're all in this together, and a good strong tide will lift all boats, okay? And sometimes you've got to go out of your way to help another human being in this country. And that's what it's about. If we, I think of those stupid, and from the Tea Party madness of several years ago, if one of those three cornered hat, puffy shirt, flint lock rifle carrying twerps were to be transported back in time to the hall in Philadelphia when they were composing our founding documents. If one of those idiots walked in, they would laugh that fool right out of the room. Okay?
Are you sure about that?
I think so. I'm talking about the dummies that want to play Revolutionary War dress up, who don't. It's, you could turn the fucking Hubble telescope around, focus it on them, and you could not measure any degree of caring, truly caring, for their fucking country. They're in it for themselves. They don't want to be inconvenienced in any goddamn way. Okay? So there's that group. And then the other group, of course, are the people who make money hand over fist, regardless of who's in charge. Because that's the game that they play. They're not in it for patriotism. They're not in it for religious or moral principles. They are in it for the all-fucking-mighty dollar. Those are my three groups. And maybe there are others, but those are the ones who either listen to and believe or benefit from.
And then, like that famous article from The Onion from many years ago, there are those people who are motivated by the Constitution that exists only in their own imaginations. You know, the Constitution that has the word Jesus in it.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. I remember that one.
And has small government in it. And has the Pledge of Allegiance in it. I got some thank yous to send out. Thank you to Otto. Good to see Otto in the chat room. It's been a while. Otto's back with us. Good to see Otto. Thank you, Otto, for chipping in. Thank you to our dear sister Jude in the Northwest. Thank you for chipping in. That means we got $25 to go to finish the evening. And we've got an offer on the table from Ralphs. If somebody will knock out 10, she'll knock out the other 10. So that would leave us at only $5. So that's huge. Thank you. Thank you to Jude, and thank you to Otto, and thank you for the offer to Ralphs. Thank you all so very kindly. Tom in sunny San Rafael. Good thing corn isn't in season yet. I love the way Tom thinks because, well, if corn was in season, all the people who are hoarding the toilet paper would be hoarding the corn.
Yeah, there you go.
God. Cynthia with a note. Cynthia says, hi, Bob. So I was using the facilities here while you were talking about people using a lot of toilet paper. My dad taught us kids early on to be careful about using more toilet paper than we needed. You see, he was a product of the Depression, and I'm sure that the people living through those times learned to make the best use of everything they could, as they had next to nothing. I'm guessing people are going to be learning that again. Well, I wonder, because it's obvious that there are Americans out there now, Scott, who have enough toilet paper to last them a couple of years, and this is the other thing. This is the other thing.
Yeah.
There is only one way to put the toilet paper roll on the toilet paper hanger.
It's sheets over the roll,
over the top.
Yes.
People who put it down the back are horrible human beings and should be driven from polite society. But I don't know, Cynthia. I don't know if people are going to learn because there are Americans out there that have so much toilet paper that they may be spending their time in shutdown just going zzz, just to see how fast it'll come off the roll.
Now, let me, since we've sashayed over to the toilet paper aisle, let me address a couple of things.
Oh dear God, are we sashaying?
I don't know. Pardon me. The lady walks in the hardware store, says, "Pardon me, sir, do you have brass nuts?" And he says, "No, ma'am, I just walk this way." But anyway.
You're going to hell for that one.
I know. But I...
Walk this way. If I had to walk that way, I wouldn't need the talcum powder.
That's right. If I'm toying with the idea of writing a letter like he's not busy enough to whoever the president of the Kroger Corporation is. To ask, how is it that we cannot keep supplies of things like toilet paper and paper towels fully stocked? And I don't think it's a matter of trucking, because all of these major grocery store chains in metropolitan areas have these humongous warehouses that make a Sam's Club look like an outhouse, to keep it on a defecation theme. Okay. And that's where the Kroger trucks back up, get stocked up with stuff to take to the individual stores.
Our Kroger warehouse is in Roanoke. It used to be in South Charleston or in Charleston, yeah. But it's in Roanoke now.
It's like a regional outlet for all of the stores in that division.
Yeah. There's a great big intergalactic Walmart, warehouse in, I think, Harrisonburg, Virginia. I don't know if that service is ours. Ours may come from Ohio. Are you there?
Yeah, okay. I thought I lost you. Or
No. By the way, you've got a vote. Billable Rick says Scott for president with Andrew Cuomo as vice president because America doesn't need no more bullshit. The ironic phrase on Trump 2020 flags. Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe Trump 2020 can't take a shit. You know. Note coming in from Suman. Hygiene tips. Bob, this is incredible. I thought I was tuning into a political show, and I'm getting so many tips on personal hygiene from you and Scott. So glad I'm still working and didn't start on dinner yet. Well, that is the blessing of listening to this program in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone, Suman. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's That is our purpose here. We're talking about the issues of the day, but we're also lifting your spirits, hopefully. That's part of the reason why I check in. I mean, I hope I bring good information to the table. But also, you got to get a chuckle here and there. Jesus, I mean, there's therapeutic benefits to be had from to the extent that you can keep in your sunny side up. Jesus, I mean, you know, here's the deal, though. Here's how I'll know where things are turning around is, you know, at some point, months and months from now, we'll know that things have turned around when the production line at the Darwin Awards cranks back up.
You know, the nominees are piling up. The girl who licked the toilet in the airplane, the kid who licked the deodorant aisle, and a story I saw earlier today of kids being taken in by the police and sternly lectured for pretending to cough on people in the grocery store.
God.
Not laughing.
I know.
I generally don't believe in corporal punishment, but.
Well, the Darwin Awards, I'm sure everybody who's listening knows, basically they're awards given to people who behave in an irretrievably stupid manner. I have in mind Trump, of course, Rand Paul, and the kids I mentioned, the college students down on the beach in Florida. Well, if I get it, I get it. Here's the deal. There will be plaques, trophies, medals, certificates, whatever it is that they present posthumously to people who are recipients of the Darwin Awards. That assembly line or a production line will be running full tilt boogie. Three shifts a day, morning, noon, and night. And that's how we'll know that we're coming back. America's coming back. Never mind that bear in the woods. But getting back to toilet paper.
We've started something. Hold on. Well, we've started something.
All right.
Cynthia wrote back and said, I can't argue with your comment there about the people with a lifetime supply. There are people, of course, in desperate need of toilet paper and can't find it in any store. They're the ones likely to learn the lesson. But otherwise, I couldn't agree more. There's only one way to load the toilet paper, over the top, exactly as you described. People who load the roll otherwise are backwards and bad people, and they're no doubt Trump pansies. Now, I'm going to get hate mail, and three people will cancel their fucking subscriptions because they're over-the-back toilet paper people. Fuck! I can't win.
Well, let me run something by you.
Wait, Bob. We got to get people's all input right here because we started okay, something.
All right. Yes, we did.
Lady B, subject line, toilet paper rolls. Over the top! Hey, fucking men. P.S. Guys are 50-50, women are 100 every time. A good mother teaches her girls good hygiene early on. Much easier for us to get UTIs and yeast infections. In other words, you will pry my northern mega rolls from my cold, dead fingers. Signed, lady, a guy can shake, but a lady wipes every time. B. I watched it all happen because we have daughters, and Agnes was most meticulous. It's front to back, damn it. Not back to front. It is front to back. And because of the aforementioned UTIs. It's one of those evolutionary things. You know, they say that when the old anti-Semite and virulent damn near Nazi Henry Ford died and went to his long home, there at the pearly gates, the Almighty inquired of him and said, and praised him. He said, now I'm sending you to hell because you're awful, but I got to give you credit for the automobile. That's a nice car, that Model T and that Model A. You did a good job with that. And he said, "Now what do you think about my design for woman, Eve?" Henry Ford looked at him and said, "You put the exhaust too close to the intake." Yep. Going to hell for that one too. Jude in the Great Northwest says, roll over the top, folding the next tissue at an angle for the next person, allowing easy access. Because Jude's not just civilized. Jude is really civilized and really thoughtful and really caring and really considerate. And that's perfect. And she says, yes, it's a small thing that I've done from all my years in hospice while in their precious homes. That's just lovely, Jude. That's just sweet. Ron in Raleigh, toilet paper. A couple of years ago, someone found the patent drawing for the original toilet paper dispenser. It showed the paper over the roll. A definitive answer, by cracky. Just-in-time delivery is the problem with shelves going empty. It's never just in time. And it's just-in-time delivery is fragile by definition. Frank reminds us, if you squish a half a slice of orange quick enough, it's a pleasantly scented sitz bath. Remember that, friends. You know, and slice the orange. Right. And you, psst, and ah. Message to Scott from Glenn in San Diego.
Yes.
My workshop is in your neighborhood, and the one item I do have stocked there are paper towels. I'd be happy to get some to you if you're in need. By the way, you know there's a Trader Joe's in spitting distance across the walkway from Ralph's. I shopped at TJ's this morning. Got there 30 minutes before opening. Two lines were created, one for us boomers and one for the rumpkins. They let us in first, 50 at a time. No paper products, but well stocked on everything else. Bob can give you my phone number or text or my email, and I'll be happy to get to those paper towels. Isn't this community just lovely?
That is lovely. That is lovely. And I will let you know if I'm going to I have another place in mind that I'm going to go to tomorrow. I dare not mention it on an international broadcast for fear that they'll be out of stock by the time I get there. And I'll report back and let you know. And if all else fails, I'll take you up on your kind offer. That's very kind. That's very kind indeed. We are so fortunate in this country in terms of toilet tissue. And maybe it was propaganda back in the 80s, but I seem to remember something about Russian toilet paper not being anywhere near the quality of American toilet paper. And there, as here during this thing going on, this epidemic, this pandemic, I remember the stores in Russia where and maybe it was all propaganda, but these poor bastards bundled up in their fur hats and shit, standing in line for hours to walk in to a huge warehouse outlet with barely stocked shelves, but the toilet paper was just primitive. It was tissue thin. Maybe that's why they call it toilet tissue, but you could unfurl it over the top, preferably, and every couple of feet there would be like wood chips the size of a Roosevelt dime in the stuff. And I'm going to put that where?
Size of a Kopeck.
Well, yeah, or a Kopeck, yeah. But I, you know, and it's like, and even as a child, Aunt Emma used to use Scott tissue, toilet tissue, and that stuff was not like the modern air-puffed toilet tissue of today.
And here's another little law of nature.
We're ruining dinner. I am, anyway. And I'm sorry.
No, this is another law of nature. The less you pay for the motel room, the more the toilet paper will resemble crepe paper.
Yeah, yeah. There's much truth.
The cheaper the motel room, the worse the toilet paper. And with some of that stuff, you really do have to do the wrap your hand like a boxer getting ready to put on the gloves because it's because it's so thin. Well, there are things in my life I'm not proud of, okay? But there is some toilet paper out there that is so thin you can roll a joint in it. You just can.
Oh no. Have you,
Scott? Well, were you paying, Scott? Were you paying attention?
Yeah, I
said there are some things in life you're not proud of, but
yeah.
And I knew.
Have you ever used
And I knew that somebody would eventually come to the defense of down the back.
Oh yeah,
and that would be Roger in Oregon.
Okay.
over the top is fine if you don't have a four-year-old or cats in the house.
Oh, cats. I forgot about cats.
I don't know why a cat wouldn't be able to yank it back down the back as well. But then again, maybe. Yeah, okay, sure. All right. It's not a law of nature now.
Hmm. Well, I've been an over-the-top guy for many a moon.
I've been accused. I myself have been accused of being over-the-top. For instance, this segment of the program.
Well, no, I don't mean it that way. But it's just, I don't know, Bob. These times in which we live are fraught. They truly are. You know, coming up in July here in San Diego, one of the biggest public events that we have here that we've had for 50 years. This will be, I think, the 51st is the Comic-Con.
Yeah.
I can't see any way that that's going to happen.
No.
You know,
to get serious
a minute, hundreds of thousands of people showing up dressed up like superheroes, packed in cheek by jowl. Are you kidding me? Flying in from all over the world?
No, but I'm sure there are some maggots out there. We got look, Liz. You know how odious Liz Cheney is.
Ooh, I shuddered as you said her name.
Yeah, the big time Dick's awful daughter.
Yeah, the spawn of Count Dicula.
Yes,
Count Dicula.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, back to the toilet paper for just a minute.
Uh oh.
Tom in sunny San Rafael says, in order to placate my bride, we're an over-the-top household, but over-the-back keeps the cats from playfully unrolling the entire roll on the floor. So apparently there's a cat calculus involved, and there's a solution to all of this. If you can't agree, you just don't put it on the roll, and you set it on the back of the tank, or on the top of the tank behind you, and you reach for it when you go. Right. And that way it's convenient for the cats too, because they can then just come and bat the whole goddamn thing into the bowl if you have been so unwise as to not put down the lid, which is another way of teaching the menfolk how to be civilized.
Yes.
See, you forgot to put the lid down, and now the toilet paper's soaked.
Well, not just the lid, but the ring, because sitting is not. How does that go? Sitting is not universal. It's universal for women. I don't know.
No, but if you put the whole lid down, then the lid comes up and everybody's happy. You either reach for two or you reach for one.
Yeah. But, okay.
Yeah. And Jude points out, it keeps one focused on not overly consuming. An ouch will do that. Indeed, indeed. Oh, golly.
Well, I tell you, I have I've become more focused, like that thing with the produce bag, licking your thumb and forefinger. I carry my own plastic bag.
It took
me
two full minutes to get that damn thing open.
I know. And the easiest way to do it is the way that you automatically do it, with the moistened thumb and forefinger, okay? But that's not wise. I mean, how do I know that they have, you know, squeegeed down the cart before I use it, after the previous person has used it at the store? Not to say anything about Ralph's. And they say that they've got staff that is working to keep everything as clean as possible. I mean, in a public environment. But, you know, you're going up and down the aisles, you want to have a cabbage, you get to the thing, you pull off the roll, a bag from the roll of produce bags, and your thumb and forefinger get to within a two-inch distance of your mouth, and you think, God damn it, wait a minute, what am I doing? Where has my hand been, you know? And I guess we've got to start thinking somewhat differently in these circumstances.
All right, since it is the dinner hour, what does this mean for fried chicken?
How do you mean?
Well, you're not one of those weirdos that eats fried chicken with a fork, are you?
Oh, no. Chicken was meant to be eaten, you know, pick it up,
Now, if you want to be high class, stick a pinky out to the side. But no, I've never eaten chicken with a knife and fork. Not even at a fancy eating place with pot passers and all.
Yeah, I know, the pot passers.
You know?
But one other thing. Brother Deacon Asa lets me know, just as a reminder that this is human nature and not just, you know, us Merkins. He says, a Chinese friend of mine tells me that there are folks in China who still have shit that they hoarded from the SARS outbreak. To stupid is universal. Indeed, yeah. Indeed.
Well, I just, I don't want to make it sound worse than it is, but this whole situation has the potential of going south very quickly, you know? Because people, the longer they're cooped up and cooped in, I'm surprised personally that there haven't been more news reports about after a week or 10 days or 2 weeks, people getting on, you know, working everybody's last nerve and fights and shootings and stabbings and shit breaking out. Not that I wish it, but it's like, I know how human beings are wired. And in today's world, I know how a lot of people are wired.
Well, and that's why it's important that we take care of what needs taken care of first, which is not airlines, which is not cruise ship companies, which is not Goldman fucking Sachs, which is not the insurance industry or the reinsurance industry or the broadcast outlets or any of the billionaires and millionaires. The people who need taken care of first are the people who don't have jobs. All right. It's not rocket surgery, all right? Because we are looking at a potential situation where this is what's driving Trump nuts. He knows that he's pretty well fucked, if history is any measure, if he goes into November with 20 or 30% unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what they're talking about. And 30% unemployment will exceed the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Now, it's artificially high unemployment because it is strictly because of deliberate actions we have taken. Deliberate actions that we took as a matter of self-preservation. So we know that it has, you know, unlike the Great Depression, unlike the Second World War, it has a definable endpoint, and that is when this thing has been beaten. But we can't force the thing to be beaten, and we cannot force the end of this crisis. So what we have to do, and this is pure, just unquestionable Keynesian economics, the government puts money in people's pockets so people can continue to do the things they need to do. Pay the rent, pay the power bill, pay the gas bill, pay the car payment, pay the mortgage, pay the homeowners, buy groceries, buy fuel.
Well, and that leads me to
pay the exorbitant Affordable Care Act premiums. I mean, see, there are things that if we're creative and compassionate, we can come up with. We can say, for instance, we're going to pump a bunch of money into the Affordable Care Act and everybody's premium is paid until this thing is over.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that would almost be universal health care, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, wouldn't it? Let me run something past you in the waning moments, Bob, because this is kind of why I called in the first place. And I was surprised to see in my email inbox an email from my congresswoman, Susan Davis, who sadly will be retiring after the end of this current term. She'll be stepping down to retire. I mean, she's been in the Congress for 20 years. She's the best representative I've ever had in my many years of having representatives all over the country. Okay, I sent Representative Davis, along with Kamala Harris and Senator Harris and Senator Feinstein, an email the other day to point out a flaw in the thinking, from my point of view, in this emergency funding thing for human beings in the country. As it stood when I wrote the email, They were talking about $1,200 for each person, okay, or each adult, okay? But if you were senior or disabled, it would be $600. And I thought that that was, there was a fallacy, a shortcoming in that thinking. And what you just said earlier sort of strengthens my argument. The people who will be getting the $1,200 will use it for stuff that they haven't been able to pay in recent days or weeks. There'll be nothing really for extras. Meanwhile, those of us who are seniors or disabled receiving Social Security, I don't know about other people, but my monthly income from Social Security pretty much covers everything from month to month. And some months there's even a little extra. If we were to get $1,200, we're already getting Social Security. Okay, we're steady in terms of our ongoing needs.
Right, but none of this matters.
But if they want the economy to stay strong, you need people out there consuming.
Right, and this is the fundamental disconnect for Republicans relative to the economy. They don't understand that the economy isn't Wall Street; that the economy is, to coin the term, Main Street.
Yeah,
that the economy is comprised of the little shops and little businesses in our everyday little worlds. And, you know, John Irving in The World According to Garp many, many years ago made the observation, and I always thought that it was kind of profound, that it doesn't matter if you live in Tokyo or New York City. Everywhere you live ultimately becomes a small town because you can't live in all of it. And so the things that are around you and the things that are within reach of you become the town you live in, even if it's Tokyo or New York.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the little stores that you deal with, the grocery stores you deal with, if you've got a car, whoever fixes it, if you've got to deal with taking care of the physical plant of your house, whoever you call for plumbing, electrical work, whatever, that's your community. And if you do not take care of your community, if you expect that you can take care of Wall Street and somehow Wall Street will miraculously, through its tender mercies, take care of your plumber, you're a goddamn fool.
Yeah. It's simple. I mean, think back. Look at our own history in this country. Look at Herbert Hoover, that poor bastard. He was a fairly decent, honorable person, as human beings go, in terms of humanitarianism and things like that.
I mean, for a white supremacist, but yeah.
Well, but he sucked as a president. And when the stock market crash happened and then the Great Depression was getting underway, he didn't think that it was government's place to intervene.
And boy, was he wrong.
Well, yeah. If he did, it was only done in a really foolish way, not an ineffective way.
And in point of fact, it's interesting you would mention Hubert Hoover, because Dr. Bill was back this afternoon, and God willing, the crick don't rise, he'll be back tomorrow. And he brought up the subject of Hubert Hoover, and I jumped in because I'd given Agnes a break, and I was sitting back here producing. And I jumped in and engaged with Dr. Bill in the last quarter hoor of the program about Hubert Hoover. And we talked about what a white supremacist he was. And he was, and it was vicious. Because he was perfectly willing to take care of war-torn post-World War I Europe because it was full of white folks. Even if it had been white folks that were trying to kill our folks. He was willing to try to get Germany back on its feet. Not so much when it came to chaining African-American men together against their will to sandbag the levees of the rising Mississippi River in the Great Flood of 1927. And then there was the viciousness of his temporary relocation camps that was involved as well. But
Don't forget the bonus army.
Yeah, but Dr. Bill is back, and his podcast is already up. Both at Podbean and on, I think, iTunes, and I'm pretty sure over at whiterosesociety.org. So if you've been missing out on your Dr. Bill fix, Dr. Bill is back and should be back tomorrow. All that having been said, time to get out of here, Scott.
Yes, I know that, but let it be noted and underlined and circled in red that this country cannot pull a Herbert Hoover at this point, at this juncture of the narrative. We cannot do that. We're fools to do it. We have got to just jump into this thing like we're trying to send the virus to the moon in this decade and bring him back safely. No, don't bring the virus back.
No.
Okay? Yeah. We have got to have that degree and depth of seriousness, or we are all screwed.
Right. And the point that needs to be made here is when you say we cannot do a Herbert Hoover on this, what you're actually saying, for people who don't know history, is we cannot treat this crisis like Republicans treat every fucking financial crisis that has ever been. Okay?
Yeah.
We can't worry about the poor little bankers and the poor little coupon clippers and the poor little corporations. For once, at least since FDR, for once, we have got to worry about the people who actually carry this country and, yes, the precious economy on their backs.
Yeah. Yeah. Because to do otherwise is to risk something that in this day and age, I don't think that they realize just what is at risk. All fucking hell could break loose if we botch this job.
And but let's remember from the beginning of the program, we're not being asked to dodge bullets or jump away from grenades. We're not asked to be in the belly of a warship at sea, waiting for the telltale sound of a torpedo in the water. We're being asked to stay home and watch movies.
Yeah, and now that's. Anybody can do that and do it well, even. Now is not the time to be grousing about that being put out in their mind, being put out in any way. Stay home. Get to know the people around you.
Listen to this program. Call in. If I have to do 6 hours a night, I will, so that people can break the silence of their own lives and get into the conversation.
Yeah. Now more than ever, really. I mean, come on.
This is the moment that this program was born for. We had no idea when we conceived this and when Boss Man Wayne originally funded it. We had no idea that this was down the road. But here we are, and this is the moment we were made for.
Yeah, for such a time as this, I think, is the tried and true expression. But anyway, Bob.
Well, on the way out the door, you've got a note from Lee in New York. Lee wants to remind you of something. Germs, tell Scott that money really is dirty.
Oh, I know.
So are handles, any surfaces, any chairs, and touchscreens. Nothing is sanitary outside of a hospital ICU. So, Scott, have a good evening. Take that and run with it.
I don't think I could enter my PIN number at the Ralph's at the checkout machine with my elbow. So maybe I ought to just hermetically seal myself in a giant life-size condom.
That's why you carry the ballpoint pen. You can damn sure enter it with that.
Well, that's true.
Or the end of any kind of marker with a cap. As long as we're talking about hard buttons and not touchscreen. And if it's touchscreen, you get a pen that's got one of those soft touchscreen tips on the end. I mean, we're not talking about the monkeys dancing around the obelisk with a goddamn bone, Scott.
Yes, you're right, Bob. As always, as usual, you're so often right. Jesus, it scares me. It scares me. How does Agnes keep you in line, being as right as you often are?
By reminding me how wrong I am the rest of the time, that's how.
Okay. Okay, well, take care.
Later,
take
Scott.
Take care. Good night to the Horn family, wherever you are.
Bye, Scott. In far San Diego, with no
Paper towels in sight. That's our buddy Scott. And Glenn, thanks for reaching out. That was really, really kind. If he says, "Hey, tell Glenn I need the paper towels." There's TP and there's PT. If he says, "Hey, tell Glenn I need the PT," I'll let you know. Thank you again. Late breaking cowbell from Steve in New York. Going back to the business with the toilet paper roll. Sounds like it is all about the cat. Now you know why the cowbell. There's nothing like running humor. Larry, meanwhile, in Liberalville. Subject line TP. In regards to your current topic, I read the comments about the Australian virus ad you referenced last week. At the end, the ad mentions alternate uses for Rupert Murdoch publications. My take? You can't use Rupert Murdoch's publications for TP because you'll end up with more shit on your ass than when you started. Thanks for the reference to the Aussie comedy. Well, thank you for that, Larry in Liberalville. That's because that's demonstrably true. James in Illinois says, this might even push a few more states into the market, you know, for co-fefe care. Just saying. Oh, that'll be a conspiracy theory all of its own, won't it, James?
You know, the Democrats working with the Chinese, they put this virus on us freedom-loving Alabamians, so we'd have to accept their communist socialist Medicaid.
I hate being able to channel them as well as I do. It makes for some nasty nights of dreaming sometimes. So on the way out the door, and we've done a little overtime this evening. We're 11 minutes past closing. But on the way out the door, we got $25 to go to finish the evening. I know how hard this all is. I just want to try to keep all this going. And so of that $25, there's a $10 matching challenge courtesy of Ralph's. And so if somebody out there's got $10, we'll end the evening only $5 short. Or if you do 15, Ralphs will gladly throw in the other 10, and we'll be done. Thank you, one and all, who keep this program on the air for everybody else. Thank you. And thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program. Thank you so much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. We can do this, you know.